aboard, you people. It's the Starship Rokan Show for another year of broadcast insolence.
Miss you so much.
Thank you.
Feels like Kevin. It's been a year.
It almost has been a year. It almost has been. But we're back, and coming up in this hour, we're going to talk to, just in 20 seconds here, John O'Malley's with us. He's our security consultant, unpaid position. But because he's former Chief Deputy United States Marshal right here for the Northern District of Illinois, and we want to talk about what happens if a state-sponsored terrorist attack should befall a major American city. And I'm really just talking about us, because that's, you know, I mean, God forbid it should happen anywhere else, but I want to talk about what would happen here, because that's what people are talking about today. It is crazy how many people have, in the last, well, let's call it 48 hours, called me and said, oh my God, what happens if something happens here? You know, a 9/11-esque mm-hmm. kind of attack on Chicago. Because, John, you could talk about this because you've been around this industry of security and major city security for a very, very long time. State-sponsored terrorism is different than terrorism groups. Right. Far more sophisticated.
Sure. So, and, you know, as you mentioned, so we're a long way in a better position than we were, you know, prior to 9/11, from just the intelligence aspect alone, and what is shared with, you know, your local law enforcement
from the feds, essentially.
Well, and even before that, you had all the intelligence agencies who wouldn't even share information with each other,
right?
Because they didn't feel, the CIA in particular wasn't willing to share with civilian law enforcement like the FBI and others. So from that perspective, we're in a much better position than we were at that time period. So what happens now is, with the recent developments, a lot of that intelligence will be shared at a certain level with, you know, NYPD, Chicago is in that mix, with certain members of the Chicago Police Department that have that clearance level. There's not many, but there are members of the Chicago Police Department at the Chicago Police Intelligence Center that have a security level that will get a little bit more information. They'll clean that up, put that out to the rest of the department, and then, you know, to the media, to the general public.
Right. What in situations like that. But let's talk about what kind of backup we have here in the city of Chicago. So we've a really robust camera program now.
Yes.
But there's got to be more in terms of the ability of people to be able to get in with explosives into the downtown area or anywhere else.
Yeah, so a lot of the infrastructure will be protected. I'm looking out right now at Navy Pier. There's other areas in the city that are constantly surveilled and watched by the good guys to make sure our infrastructure, electric, power, water, things of that nature, are constantly on a rotation of tight security, not only on the private sector, but with the public help as well, with Chicago Police Department, with the FBI and other federal agencies here. And it's talking specifically about Chicago, that meet on a regular basis and watch that infrastructure to see what happens. With something like the latest news that has occurred over the last week or so, that only gets heightened. And that,
so this,
know,
is a real deal. So,
oh, for
right
sure.
After,
absolutely.
As soon as Soleimani was killed, then immediately there's a reaction in Washington, and then those guys who are responsible for major city and domestic security, DHS and people like that, they immediately get a hold of the local law enforcement here and say, all right, here's the deal. It's probably not going to happen the first 24 hours, because you'd have to have a sleeper cell ready to go.
Right, too new. Yeah.
Yeah, but certainly as the days go on here, all the major cities have to be on alert.
Absolutely. And then there's outside of the infrastructure, the power, the water, things of that nature, what really needs to be looked at now are any specifically religious institutions that may be targets, or other areas that we wouldn't think of that they would strike the infrastructure of a city like Chicago or New York. So NYPD is probably the best funded, the best resource, best tied into intelligence. They have NYPD officers actually in Israel, in the Middle East, who are, you know, embedded with intelligence gathering agencies. I don't believe Chicago has that, but we do have that connection to get that information, but it's not as firsthand as NYPD is. But they also have the funding because of grants they receive, because they're a little bit of a harder target, or a little bit of a bigger target than Chicago would be.
But Chicago is an important target because it's an infrastructure hub.
Absolutely.
For the for transportation, for communications, things like that. We're the center part of the country, and you know, a lot of the, a great majority of the web traffic in America goes through the servers here in Chicago.
Sure. And the population that we have here, and who's living here are in the outskirts of
Chicago. And the markets as well.
Absolutely. And that's another big piece is, you know, attacking via cyber those same power companies, the markets, Board of Trade, the
right.
Chicago
Boeing
Mercantile Exchange,
is here.
Many major corporations to get in there just to disrupt anything they can do to disrupt business operations on a large company is huge.
Okay, I want to know how concerned on a level of 1 to 10 you are, but hold on. We'll do traffic and weather first with Lauren Lapkin and then get back to that.
Chicago's very own Radio Chicago WGN.
Rokan Show with Rokan, Lauren Lapka on the traffic, Kevin Powell on the sports, Kim Gordon on the news, and me on Random Thoughts. All right, let's talk to John O'Malley. We've been talking to him about security here in Chicago. Over the weekend, obviously, big news internationally as the United States kills a major Iranian military official while he was in Iraq. And coming up a little bit later on in the program, we've got a little debate about whether or not that was a good idea. By a Republican and Democratic congressman from Illinois, talking about that they will have differing positions on that. Adam Kinzinger and Raja Krishnamurthy will be joining us to talk about that in one segment. We're going to limit that to a quick debate of whether it's good or bad, because it doesn't matter anymore whether it was a good idea or a bad idea.
It's been done.
What's done is done. And now the real concern is about domestic security. Right. So obviously security overseas for U.S. assets overseas, whatever they happen to be, whether they're military assets, as we will recall, the USS Cole shot down. That's a U.S. missile frigate. It was in the Persian Gulf. It shot down an Iranian airliner, civilian airliner, as it was leaving Iranian airspace. The United States Navy said that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. We're sorry. We didn't mean to do it. The Iranians did eventually retaliate for that. They've retaliated in a number of ways, but they attempted to car bomb the captain of the Cole's car while he was living in San Diego, mm-hmm. unsuccessfully, but they tried to do it. That's the sort of thing. My guess is that this is not going to go unretaliated in some way, shape, or form.
Well, yeah, I unfortunately agree, especially since they've been so vocal about it. They're not going to, because then where's their credibility? If they don't do something to attack U.S. interest or, at a minimum, the allies of the U.S. specifically. My concern is London. I think that's a rich target, and the infrastructure that they may have there already.
The Iranian secrets.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All their, yeah.
Yeah, so not to frighten anyone who's in London, traveling to London, or has plans there soon, because London does have a very robust intelligence and security infrastructure there as well, which is good. But it's definitely I would be surprised if there isn't some kind of retaliation. Hopefully not U.S. based. Not to take away any to minimize the U.S. interests overseas, but because the military strength is still there. That's a concern. We've already seen them try to attack normally bases and areas near bases that they wouldn't have prior to this.
So. Right. So what is, on a scale of 1 to 10, for Chicago?
For Chicago?
What do you think that your concern is as a guy who has sat in these meetings talking mm-hmm. about security?
Maybe a 3.
Okay. Yeah. That makes me feel somewhat better.
Yeah.
I prefer a 0, but that's all right.
Well, I just don't know enough, being far gone, coming on 5 years, how much infrastructure that Middle East cells would have in the Chicago area. I know there are, that we've seen, prosecutions in civilian court, specifically here in Chicago on some terrorist activity, most of the time done before it happened. Yeah, there's definitely a concern. It's hard to put a number on it, though, Ro, because, right now there's something just happened, so now that may have woken them up to take action. Or people who think that they're being told to take action might try something.
In terms of sleeper cells, you see this in movies and on TV and stuff like that. How robust is a sleeper cell program, whether it's for was for Al Qaeda or ISIS or state sponsors like Iran or North Korea?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say because and the good thing is I think that the law enforcement with the combination of the intelligence agencies right now does a good job of shutting that down before it even gets before those roots are taken. Right. You see that a lot in the media where cases have been brought in other jurisdictions, even, you know, outside of Northern Illinois, Florida, New York, other areas of the country. So it's really hard to say how sophisticated they are, where the funding's coming from, and what capabilities they have. Everyone can have a great idea, but if you can't carry it out, you don't have the capabilities to carry it out, then it's kind of benign, right?
Supercell's generally made up of nationals, or are they made up of Americans?
Both, you know, American sympathizers, we've seen that, right? Mm-hmm. Or U.S.-born, even not necessarily even a heritage from the Middle East, but, you know, U.S. regular United States citizens who sympathize.
Yeah,
and might
get caught up in the video game world.
Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah, their ideology is such that this, and then an event like this just sparks, you know, that reaction. Like, see, you know, I knew, you know, why are we doing this? So that's what I'd be a little bit worried about. We had that protest popped up out of nowhere. It was pretty strong over the weekend, where, you know, a couple hundred people showed out. That I think, you know, I don't think that was expected. It was kind of caught off guard. And social media. A lot of monitoring going on deep in social media.
And it also can drive domestic groups going the other way as well.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, there is going to be a fairly large demonstration in Virginia by gun rights activists who are are all kind of drawn in based on a bunch of things that are on the internet that most of which are not true about governments, whether it's Virginia or any other state governments or even the federal government coming in or the United Nations coming in and taking their guns away. And they've been able to rally. It's sort of almost like that Area 51 thing. They've been able to rally tens of thousands of people to agree to come to this thing.
Wow.
And there's great concern about what that's actually going to be like. And they want everybody to show up armed.
Yeah. Well, and then you get the counter protesters. That on top, and that's where, you know, law enforcement is get caught in the middle because they want to protect everyone's rights. But when you get two vehemently opposing groups coming to meet each other, that's where issues break down.
Yes. So. Yeah, that's very true. Okay. On a separate issue, since you are our law enforcement and security analyst, again, unpaid position, John, I don't know how many times, John O'Malley, I can actually emphasize that for you.
Sure.
There's a lot of concern about the lack of marijuana in this town. Now,
I saw that.
I have never seen this much upset about nobody having dope. And the question is, do you think that and the U.S. Marshal, when you were working in the U.S. Marshal's office, I mean, you had a front row seat to what was going on here, especially with sort of international drug dealers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the resulting publicity of the fact that dispensaries are running out of this stuff are going to keep people with their dealers?
Absolutely. Not only that, but the cost. I already heard that there's been advertisement, so to speak, in certain areas of the city that, you know, no tax. So, you know, come get your product. We're not going to tax you. I think we'll have to see where this goes. Like, what was it? Because it was so new, we saw those lines. I don't think that will continue. The lack of product, I think they predicted because I don't know if they started growing what they needed to sell fast enough.
Well, all has to, as you know, it all has to be grown in Illinois.
It has to be grown. Correct. And then, you know, the requirements to keep X amount of product for the legal medical marijuana card holders.
Okay. You know what? I do that with air quotes. The medical marijuana. I mean, I know they were the first ones in. They went and got the card. So you got to give them that. They went to a guy, a doctor with a Hawaiian shirt, who told them, "Oh yes, you're upset. Okay, I got you on this.
Right,
phantom pain, sensation of a phantom left arm. Fine, I got that third arm.
Yeah.
But what is the what happens to the drug, the marijuana trade? Do you think in the next 5 years here,
on the legal end,
illegal? End.
Oh, illegal? There is some precedent from Colorado or, you know, Washington, states out west, and the 10 other. I think there's Illinois is now the 11th state that has
a lot more coming online next time.
I would imagine. So learning from them, I don't think it stemmed too much into the illegal trade because of Cost, number one. And then, like you see today, you know, these shops are closed. So if you really need to get product, there's other ways to get it. So I don't think it'll take too much of a bite into the illegal trade.
And the cartels are still a big part of the marijuana trade here, or no? More
well,
the cocaine trade?
Yeah, well, not heroin. Yeah. And other drugs.
And fentanyl.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, coming direct pipeline from Mexico, it's huge, Chicago, because of, as we talked before, the infrastructure, the hubs. You can get into Chicago so many ways and get out of Chicago, and the infrastructure we have built here was made for trade, right? That's right. The whole reason the city exists, so people take advantage of that, for sure.
So the marijuana piece really had become a more of a domestic, in terms of illegal crop, it was more of a domestic play?
Yeah, because you can grow it, too, so easily here in the United States.
Your bathtub, Kevin. Or actually, in Kevin's Kevin's roommate's spare bedroom closet.
Bingo.
Yeah, that's where it is.
It's a great space.
I wonder what the head shops. Is that going to be now a new, like, back in business? Like,
well, the dispensaries kind of have
their own products in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have delivery mechanisms, yes. I think is the term that they use.
Yeah. Well, I don't recall ever coming across in my career too many people who were violent and heavy into marijuana that caused a lot of problems. It was, you know, so I have mixed feelings about it. I think it is. There is some medicinal purpose behind it. You know, I had some personal experience behind that. But, you know, so let's just see where it goes. But I hope that Illinois studied real hard with counterparts in Colorado and other states that
All right, John, I'm going to ask you a question. What would you put? You know, I asked you before, what's your fear factor about domestic terrorism here? What is your sense of certainty about Illinois studying what they did in Colorado?
That's probably only a 2.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
Yeah, unfortunately.
1.5.
You know, let's see what it's not for a lack of sales. That's for sure. Look, you know,
people are
interested.
They were in the it was like the coldest day, right, of the last couple of weeks, right?
Right.
It was below 30, and you're like, and people are just standing out there.
Yeah,
I mean, they didn't care.
And I didn't see one Girl Scout out there. I heard that was a thing, that they would sell Girl Scout cookies out the dispensaries in other states. And I know they're for sale because I saw it on Facebook. So.
Yeah, but did you see the food trucks lined up? I mean, that's a way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, immediately pop up nachos.
Pick up some tacos on your way home.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was selling Doritos, Cool Ranch Doritos for $15 a bag.
Right.
And they go, I only have a 20. I don't have any change. So I made a lot of money on it.
John O'Malley. The tax.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it as always.
John O'Malley,
former Chief Deputy United States Marshal for the Northern District of Illinois and the Security Analyst for the Rokan Show.
Unpaid
position. All right, let's check in now. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. Rokan Show, right here, 720 WGN. Coming up in the next hour, Ed Obradovich is going to be here. We're going to recap, talk about, wrap up in a bow, and throw out in the garbage the Chicago Bears.
And set it on fire.
Yes. Stomp on it first, pour some beer over it, and set it on fire.
I saw my Facebook memory today. It was from the double doink game last year, and I had just that pit stomach awful feeling rereading about Parkey.
I wonder how many people had that pop up on their feed.
Ugh.
Oh, think about that for a second. Oh, did that suck.
Nightmare fuel.
And they kept bringing it up. You know, anytime, it seems like every time you watch Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth do any kind of a football game.
They're so proud that they have, like, coined that term, double doink.
Yes, they bring it up almost every time there's a field goal. They bring up, yeah, don't you remember the time we were in Chicago and there was a double doink? You're like, shut up!
I know.
Shut up!
And even when you see a single doink, that's what everybody refers to it as now. Well, it was a single doink off the post.
Remember the time, though?
So that's a bet. So we're going to talk to Obi about that also. What should the Bears do here in this offseason? Given the fact, I hate to bring this up, because Ben Bradley is standing by and he's waiting to talk to us about a really important thing. So, Ben, stand by 1 second.
Okay.
All right. It's beyond the ability to reason this, but right now, one of the two quarterbacks is going to the AFC Championship game.
It's the Mitch Bowl.
that we could have had. We could have had, whether it's Patrick Mahomes, I hate to keep bringing up his name, or Deshaun Watson, we could have had either of them. And both of them are playing next Sunday.
That's accurate. Can confirm.
Okay. Okay, Ben, I'm sorry to have to bring you into all of that.
You know, I love that we've got this thing going on with Iraq and Iran and our current political crisis.
Yeah.
You don't even have time to focus on the state's attorney. You're just still worked up about football.
You know what? Some things are more important. Let's just face it. We just had John O'Malley. He's a friend of ours, right? That's what you say in mob movies. At least that's what they said in The Irish. He's a friend of ours.
Did you ask him whether he wants to be referred to as a friend of yours?
He was, a former deputy U.S. Marshal, right? Yeah. Very important dude here in Chicago in security. And we talked to him about whether or not there would be state-sponsored terrorism here in Chicago. Are we prepared for it? And that's the kind of thing I would expect to see on the 9 o'clock news tonight. But, maybe I'm just out thinking.
Just you running around screaming in panic.
Yes, that's true.
Here's a live look at the state of Rokan. forget that camera that shows the beautiful skyline shot before Skilling's weather. Let's just go live to Rokan
crying on his couch
room.
At night. Yeah. Oh, God. All right. Let's talk about a couple of different things here. There was the pot thing. It's gotten everybody's attention, and now it's freaked everybody out simultaneously. We're going to have a lawyer coming on in a few minutes. Tell us whether you can lose your job for smoking pot legally in Illinois.
I've wondered that because, a lot of companies have policies, not just at hiring, but, if you drive a company vehicle and you're involved even in, a fender bender that's not your fault, you get drug tested and marijuana stays in your system a while
longer. Contracts have already been signed by a lot of people. So either those get reworked or... Yeah.
Yes. What happens? That's exactly right. What does... Well, so we'll have a lawyer play Is This Legal with us coming up in just a little bit. That is it. But he's an employment lawyer, unlike our criminal lawyer who says everything is legal. All right. Let's talk about... Let's talk about this robbery, though, at a dispensary in Logan Square.
Yeah, it was a burglary overnight. A dispensary called Mocha Modern Cannabis on Fullerton in Logan Square got broken into. Cops say they think it was entered into by a side door. But the burglars only got away with money, no merchandise. That's according to the Tribune.
Well, these things are cash businesses. That I would imagine they are gigantic targets.
Without a doubt. In fact, I remember when they rolled out it in Colorado, that was a huge issue because they don't take credit cards and there's a lot of money going in and out of there, not to mention the product itself, which people would like to get their hands on. Interestingly, though, I guess if the burglars were looking for marijuana, they obviously didn't check the store's Facebook page, which said that it had shut down because of a shortage of the product over the weekend.
Right. But they're also... But they do have a certain amount of the product for them. They have to keep it for medicinal.
It was supposed to open today only to medicinal customers and didn't.
Well, it just got knocked over. I mean, you got that problem, as we like to say in the city of Chicago. What is the plan for these companies? I mean, I would imagine that moving the cash, this is a great boon. I already read this last week. Great boon to like Brinks and other companies that do armored car services because they can't put enough armored cars on for these things.
Well, for a long time, you remember when this first started getting rolled out in other states, there was the whole issue of whether or not the cannabis companies themselves could use the federal banking system. And that became an issue as well because keep in mind that it's still illegal technically under federal law. So that's another interesting issue.
Well, and bro, an armored car also got robbed not too long ago. So what good is that going to do either?
Well, I mean, listen, when people want to do the crime, they're going to just have to know they have to do the time. Yep. That's right. Isn't that right? Didn't we learn that from the theme song of Beretta?
Somewhere. Yeah.
And speaking of questionable conduct, can I tell you a little something we found at the obscure Metropolitan Water Reclamation District?
How you doing?
Yeah,
how
what? Doing? Yes, this is the company that treats your wastewater.
Right.
Which I know you like to think about.
They have people that they put on the ballot all the time. You're wondering now, who are those people and why am I voting for them?
Well, I'll tell you what. They've got 9 elected commissioners and a new Inspector General's report that was supposed to be confidential, but we got our hands on it. Found 4 of the 9 elected commissioners were using their government emails for political purposes, including sending invitations to political fundraisers to Water District employees, emailing offering ways to donate to their campaigns, and then one commissioner sent an email to an employee discussing collecting petition signatures for another elected official. I mean, I believe your criminal defense attorney who you have on will tell you, the first rule of thumb, don't email.
That, right.
Also, don't text
message. It's called wire fraud you do that. It's wire fraud.
Yeah, so we're looking into, will there be any consequences for these commissioners who are apparently leaning on Metropolitan Water Reclamation District employees for a little help with their campaigns? And just interesting that it was, you know, not an isolated incident, not one commissioner, not two, but nearly half of the Water Reclamation District Board. So that's an exclusive we'll have for you at 4.
All right. Thank you, Ben Bradley.
Are you laughing because political corruption is not exclusive?
And apparently not. Ben Bradley, we'll see him on the WGN-TV news starting at 4 o'clock and all the way until midnight or whenever the hell you guys stop. Thank you, Ben.
Yep,
appreciate it. Let's check in now with Lauren. What's happening in the skies and the roads? It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN Chicago. All right. A lot of people are asking this question today. Now the marijuana, that's a technical term, weed, scooch, bow.
Are you making some of these up?
Yeah, some of them
I'm
making.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to go back to like the 1970s. You know, they call it that kind of
Mary
stuff.
Mary Jane.
Right.
The devil's lettuce.
Mm-hmm. Now that that's legal in Illinois, people are, especially people who have employment contracts or they sign some sort of work agreement to work, yeah, often those agreements have a proviso that prohibits the employee from engaging in the marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if there's random drug testing, they could pop for it and they could either be terminated or, you know, in some other way.
Reprimanded.
Yes, by their company. That would be, that could happen. Right? But now it's legal. Right? I mean, it's like if we got reprimanded for having a cocktail, we would not have a show.
Oh, we would have been gone a long time ago.
Yes. I would have been gone in the first hour of the program. Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say that. Jimmy O is with us. He is an attorney at law, and he is with the law firm. I want to get this right because your partners are going to be mad if we don't get it right. Epstein, Becker, and Green, right?
Correct.
All right. Now, you are an employment lawyer. You understand these kinds of things.
Hopefully.
Yes. Now, and I are your phones ringing so hard they're practically levitating?
Not just yet, although I was recommending to clients and to other companies who read my articles that you should talk about this issue before it becomes legal and let your employees know what the company's policy is.
Yeah, I don't
give
think anybody
notice.
Did that.
No.
Very few people did that.
You know, you lawyers can give advice, but people don't have to listen to you.
Okay, so you sign a contract before the change of a law, right? So when the law changes, does that supersede the contract?
Well, most employment contracts are not going to specify something about marijuana. They might have something about personal conduct, but...
But what if they do? I mean, there are some that have drug... When I first started working...
Some collective bargaining agreements are going to have mention that.
When we used to have random... We had drug testing when I first worked in radio at another station, at a big company, and then that they had this rule that, you know, if you couldn't get hired... If you had marijuana in your bloodstream or anything else, right?
And that's still going to be the case in Illinois.
That even though it's legal.
Even though it's legal, the Illinois legislature was very pro-employer, actually, oddly enough, in the state of Illinois. And
you got to do something for them.
Exactly. And they put into the bill some of the strongest employer protections of any marijuana legalization bill in the country. And so
they can still reprimand you or fire you or whatever if marijuana is part of those restricted drugs, right?
Yes. And so if you have a drug testing policy now, you can continue to have it. If you have random drug testing, you can continue to do it.
But if you pop for marijuana, are they going to fire people?
Yes. Well, it depends on what your company's philosophy, policy is. And that's one of the things I was encouraging companies to do is at least get out there and make a decision and then tell your employees, here's what our policy is going to be.
Why is Kevin so nervous?
I know.
Well, maybe I'm not nervous. I'm just curious to find...
Maybe I should give him one of these brownies I brought.
Whoa. everybody's doing pot humor this week. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly.
I guess what's the best way to find out policy? I mean, what if people are nervous to even go to their bosses?
That's an excellent point.
That's actually,
hey, boss,
that's
man.
Actually,
so what's the best way to find out?
That was actually one of my points in one of these articles I wrote, and that... you know, people aren't going to want to look like Cheech and Chong or sound like Cheech and Chong and say, hey, dude, you know, what's our policy going to be on marijuana?
I think if you lead with, hey, dude, that might.
Yeah,
that might
exactly. And well. So I was recommending to companies that they get out in front of the issue so that they can give their employees notice.
Yeah, but you're a lawyer. If you were on the other side of this, you would not tell a company doesn't want to give away any kind of ground, any kind of real estate on this stuff because they want to protect their rights.
Well, I think that they're protecting their rights by giving notice and giving communications and putting out communications that this is our policy. This is how we're going to handle it. And it might be that, you know what, we're not going to terminate if you fail a random drug test maybe the first time.
For marijuana, I guess the central issue here is, and we keep talking around this like we're stoned, but the central issue is it's legal now. It would be as though you were firing somebody on a random drug test for having alcohol in their system if you did it on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Well, we are a little bit in a twilight zone here, right, in that it's still unlawful federally. And so at the federal level, if you work for, let's say, a federal government contractor who is required to have a drug-free workplace policy, and they have a drug-free workplace policy says that that's a zero-tolerance policy, if you test positive for marijuana at one of those types of companies, then your termination will be upheld by a court of law. If you work in a safety-sensitive position, let's say you're a truck driver, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody in this room is going to want to know that an 18-wheeler company employs truck drivers who drive 18-wheelers, they're allowing them to get stoned as they're driving down the highway.
No.
Well,
question
yeah, you're
about
not
it.
Working while high. I don't think anyone would be coming to work high, but that's kind of the problem, right?
Ooh, I don't know about testing.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, there's not a way to test to know right now, are you for sure high? That's kind of the issue with, you know, the DUI idea. So how
the science is not caught up yet. And, you know,
just in the Tribune over the mm-hmm. weekend, there was a story about it was a pot connoisseur who was explaining how you should use it throughout the day. It's good when you wake up in the morning and then throughout the evening. And then, you take a certain strain to kind of make you more focused at work. And then you take another strain to bring you down. And this whole kind of thing. Obviously, you're going to be the cannabinoid. You're going to be popping positive for that if you have to take a pee test.
So, yeah, I'm not speaking from experience. I'm only speaking from the research that I've done.
Okay?
Because there's still the morality of it and the societal, I don't know, outlook
stigma.
On marijuana. It's stigma. Good word.
Do we still have societal morality in the year 2020? I'm not.
I hope so.
It really seems to have slid.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the other things, too, over the weekend, I had a friend call me and said, hey, I know you're in the media and everything. I got a question for you. I just read something that if I got like a gun, like a concealed carry license or like, you know, a FOID card or something, you know, whatever. And I go into a medical marijuana store and I show them my ID. I'm going to lose my gun. I'm going to hang up
she
and wait for my
paranoid.
Answer.
She sounds paranoid. Yeah.
But this is a real issue.
You make a good point about there is a difference between a medical marijuana card holder and someone who isn't. And
yeah,
someone,
but he was talking about going in. And it wasn't he, by the way. He was talking about going in and swiping his ID because you have to do that. You mm-hmm. show your ID when you walk through the door of this
okay.
thing.
But a medical marijuana card is not going to give you carte blanche, but it might give you more protection than someone who doesn't. Because there's state law that protects against handicap discrimination, and there are people who suffer from things like Crohn's disease.
And that's for employment purposes.
Exactly.
But in terms of the gun.
That's not what I thought we were talking about.
No, we're talking about the gun now. my guy had a gun. I even want to make sure he could still carry it. It turns out that this was going around the internet. That it was, and it was being sponsored, I think, by a lot of people who wanted to create some paranoia, that around the internet, it was if you have a concealed carry card in Illinois, and you go into a dispensary, and they take a picture of your ID, because that's how they verify who you are and all that, mm-hmm. that you're, you know, that's what they do. And that's nationally they do. They do it in California and Colorado, everywhere. That was going to go to law enforcement, and because if you have a concealed carry weapon ID, you're not allowed, you can't smoke marijuana. At least that was the law up until December 31st. right? You would lose your card for that. Illinois State Police was compelled. There was so much heat on this. Illinois State Police was compelled to come out and issue a statement saying that they will not revoke firearm owner identification cards based solely on a person's legal use or adult use of cannabis. And in terms of, they did not talk about the concealed carry, however. So,
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, putting that into the employment context, if you test positive for drugs, I mean, as you know, it can stay in your system for like 30 days.
Right.
And you aren't necessarily and probably aren't impaired at work if you smoked it the night before. And then the question is, what's your company's policy going to be on that? And is it reasonable to terminate someone? And one of the things that the Illinois law does say is that employees have to be given a reasonable opportunity to contest a disciplinary action.
Jimmy O, thank you very much. Appreciate it. He's now our full-time pot attorney. We always have to have somebody on staff for these kinds of things. Appreciate it. We got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, too. You want to win Blackhawks tickets? It's the White Sox and Blackhawks are the exact opposite, right? Isn't that how that worked out?
I'd like White Sox tickets, though, too.
We can talk about that in just a second. Keep listening after 4:30. Two chances to win today. There's one coming up in just a few minutes, and another one coming up after 6 o'clock tonight. If you missed the first one, chance to win a pair of tickets, see the Hawks take on the Ducks Saturday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Four Seasons, find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of tickets to Chicago Blackhawks games from Four Seasons. They're back to 500. They're kind of
above, actually.
Yes. So I think right now I'm feeling much better about this. I have to say that I attended a few games during the break. And there is some excitement around the team, I guess.
Well, they're playing much better. They've won four of their last five. They've shown flashes of what kind of team they can be, and they're lingering. They're certainly in the playoff hunt. They're just 5 points out of the second wild card. That's Calgary, who holds that position right now. That's who's in town tomorrow night, Ro. I think the Royal Concho should be there for that.
I think
one.
We probably should be there tomorrow, I suppose, is the you know, what's really funny is that the Blackhawks organization, I don't know why I keep doing that. I do actually know. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But the Blackhawks organization, they almost now are afraid to have us there.
Blaming me for this?
I am. I am. She's so emotional. I'm going to use that in air quotes as well.
For that reason. Emotional. I thought you were going to bring up my clumsy hands.
I'm sorry, what?
The broken,
yes, she did break. She did break a piece of glassware.
Mm-hmm. In all fairness, it shattered all over my lap. Nowhere else, really.
Mm-hmm. At a restaurant-y kind of thing that we went to. So the point is that we walk into the United Center, mm-hmm. and they're almost like they have. They're a Blackhawks executive comes running up to us wearing a tie, going, "You know, the game's been canceled tonight. If you guys want to go back." That's fine. But you know what? Maybe we'll do it. We'll do it another time.
Do we have the backup shot of morphine?
Right, there's a tranquilizer gun. They got just aimed at us. So anyway, so tomorrow night, yes, the Rokon show will attend tomorrow night's game because this is it's a big one.
It's a very much a big one.
Yeah,
and one more shift for Adam Burrish.
Oh, he's our guy. We have
one
many
of
guys.
Many, yeah.
Yes, we have a lot of guys.
A long list of guys.
Yep, and that's only half of why I called. I'm so excited about this. The White Sox announced while we were on break that they have signed Luis Robert to a contract, a long-term deal that allows him to start the season up as a Chicago White Sox and as the starting center fielder. How crazy is this? Now, I have been telling you, you know, this predates Lauren being on this show. I told you, I am a gigantic Luis Robert fan. This is the kid that is going to change baseball in a lot of ways. I think he's going to be the 2020s, this decade, he will be one of the great players of this decade.
No doubt. And I think it gets people excited. It's a contract fairly similar to what they did with Eloy Jimenez last year at spring training that you don't have to worry about service time or anything like that. The White Sox show how much they trust the guy. He absolutely destroyed the minors last year down to double and triple A. It makes a ton of sense. you basically can fill out the opening day lineup at this point, which I think gets Sox fans very excited. There really aren't a whole lot of question marks, and they're still not done. I think the Sox, for all everything, the splashes they've made so far with Keuchel, with Grandal, the Jose Abreu extension, and now this one with Luis Robert, and they still might add some pieces. So this is a team that improved by 10 games last year without really any major upgrades in the offseason. Now, you add some major free agents to the mix of a young core, this is a team that should be in contention for an AL Central crown.
I do think you can expect a relief pitcher for sure to be
no
signed.
Doubt.
Other than that, I would agree with you. And obviously the question mark kind of at second, but it's not like we don't have some guys that can fill the void.
Right, or at least for the first month or so when they bring up Nick Madrigal, which is their top draft pick from a year ago, who many expect will be up in the majors in 2020. So the future
so
is here.
Him and Lurie, you think?
I think maybe you're starting second baseman to begin the year, but then when Madrigal comes up, Garcia plays more of a utility man type role. We saw him play multiple positions last year.
Very inside baseball what I just did right there. But it's important because they are our broadcast partners, and they are going to be great. As a matter of fact, right now, as it stands, they are considered the single most improved team in all of baseball.
I would agree.
No doubt. Tough to argue against it. And, I mean, I think there's a buzz around the Sox locally and even nationally. If you put on some of the national baseball programs, they're all talking about the White Sox.
Yes. It's pretty. What's interesting is that people are talking about the Cubs like oh, you know, the Cubs, the lovable losers again. I mean, that's kind of the way. When you think about the number of games that the Cubs have won in the last 7 years, and you think about the number of playoff appearances, five, right? Of the last six. I mean, you have to count the one and dones. But still, that is that people are like, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I expect them to be good, but certainly don't have the buzz like the Sox do right now.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I can smell the beer on the floor at Cork and Carry right now as I'm sitting here. Let's check in with Lauren Lapka, find out what's happening on the roads and in the skies, and then a debate between two congressmen, a Democrat and a Republican from Chicago area, about whether or not the killing of the Iranian general was a good idea.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
All right, this man has his own theme song on this program because he's been the official congressman of the Rokan show for well, the better part of the last decade, as it turns out, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, even though, and he sounds like a stoner already, and that's the thing I love most about him. He's got the good stoner laugh. You're like Brad Pitt in True Romance. All right, and congratulations to him. Let's talk about a very serious subject here. We're going to talk to you, then we're going to talk to one of your colleagues, also from the Illinois delegation. Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy is going to join us, give us his perspective on this, but your perspective on what happened here in terms of the killing of the Iranian general and whether this was the right thing for the U.S. to do.
Yeah, it was the right thing to do. I mean, this is when people say, gee, I wonder how Iran's going to respond. It may be semantics, but no, Iran would escalate because this is the first American response, the first kinetic action against repeated attacks against the U.S. and our allies. So think about it, even just within the last few months, attack a drone, then they attack oil tankers, then they attack an oil field, then they begin to attack Americans at a base, then they storm the embassy. You see where the escalation has gone in the last few months, all with no response by the United States. And when we respond, we don't attack surface-to-air sites. That may end up coming at some point, where you kill, you know, 100 people that were just doing their job. But we actually kill the man in Iraq, you know, with legal orders to do it by Article 2 of the Constitution, as well as the Status of Forces Agreement, which gives the president the inherent right and Americans the inherent right to self-defense, and also with the AUMF that gives Americans the right to be in Iraq. So this was the right thing to do in this pearl-clutching that is happening about what will Iran do next. I don't know. Let's look at the history of what they've done, and that'll give us the roadmap, because they would do it anyway. And I think this was the right move. We don't know where this is going to go, but this idea that now if this escalates, it's a result of the United States of America is completely untrue, completely false, and I think it's time that we get out of this crisis of confidence and start defending Americans before we defend the Iranian government.
one thing that has come up consistently about this is that this this Iranian general was, you know, is a uniformed officer of the Iranian military. We are not in a direct conflict state of war with Iran. I mean, we may be in a de facto state of war. We may have been in a de facto state of war since 1978 with Iran. But in terms of this, at this moment, that isn't the status, and therefore doing this to a uniformed officer is considered to be, it may not be a violation of international law. That's still to be, would have to be determined. But it's the sort of thing that's just not done. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I'm comfortable with what we did, because let's look at this. I think it's an argument that can be made if we killed Soleimani in Iran, but he was in Iraq. Why was he in Iraq? Well, there had just been attacks against America. America responded. Soleimani comes to Iraq not to broker peace, not to calm situations, because all you have to do is look at his history. He came in to assess what had happened and to figure what's next. If you look in the last few years, he's been especially bold. He doesn't travel in secret anymore. He travels in the open. He has said 100 times, America will never touch me. So he was coming in to figure out what the next moves were. So even though he wore an Iranian uniform, by the way, wearing a uniform makes you a legitimate target, according to international law. When he did it in Iraq, emboldening the people that we attacked, which was the militias, which, by the way, I fought in Iraq, that was right. And I do want to preempt something, because people are saying, well, why didn't Bush do it in 06, and why didn't Obama do it? There's a point to be made. They did consider it. That's especially noteworthy. And it's especially noteworthy given that since then, we've had 12 years of escalating attacks by Iran, driven by this guy, including a civil war in Yemen, driven by this guy, including a civil war in Syria, driven by this guy, and including instability in Lebanon and Hezbollah, driven by this guy. That's been 12 years of history since it was considered, plus Bush was in the middle of the Iraq surge. So, you know, when people say, well, Bush didn't even do it, they were close, but they had a lot more on their hands and a lot less history.
All right, very quickly before we let you go, the tweet by the president over the weekend, Saturday night into Sunday morning, about the 52 sites representing the 52 American hostages, that if Iran does anything, hurts a hair on an American head or whatever it was that he said, that there is going to be an attack on one of those 52 sites. That would be in Iran, including cultural sites, he points out in the tweet. That theoretically is a violation of the Articles of War as established by the United Nations and Geneva Convention. What is your thought on that?
Well, I know that's not what you meant, but a tweet isn't a violation. Two things on that, though, real quick, is, number one, if it makes the American people uncomfortable, think of how uncomfortable it's making Iran. That's the point. They need to moderate and mitigate whatever escalation they decide to do. I probably wouldn't have put cultural sites in that tweet. And as you know, I've been critical when he does a domestic tweet that's divisive. But I think his tweets on this issue are right, because it's not the audience of the American people. The audience is the Iranian government, and they need to know he means business.
All right. Congressman, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Fun,
all right.
Fun, as always. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. I think he just told me to blank myself. I wasn't quite sure. Broke up. Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy is a Democrat from the Chicago area. And
hey,
you just heard Congressman Kinzinger there. Let's start with, first of all, your initial reaction to the military action over the weekend.
Well, look, I think Soleimani is a bad guy. Nobody argues that. I think we can't go to war with Iran. I think that's the big question here. I'm a member of the Intelligence Committee, and we were told after the fact that Soleimani was involved in plotting an imminent threat to America. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about that tomorrow when we're briefed. But, you know, basically the question remains whether that threat is going to be carried out, whether it's going to be worse now that he's been killed, and whether we're going to blunder our way into war. I think those are the big questions right now.
Are you, let's talk a little bit about the political tone of the president's Twitter account as it pertains to this action. There's been a lot of criticism about him drawing in Democrats as, you know, potentially akin to Iranians, why you guys weren't, or at least Gang of Eight members that were Democrats weren't briefed about this action before it happened. The theory that it would be like telling the Iranians because that would be bad. What are your reaction to that as a Democrat?
Oh, that's crazy. And I think that the reason why he didn't go to the Gang of Eight or to Congress beforehand is because he did not want that evidence to be scrutinized with regard to the quote-unquote imminent plot involving Soleimani. He didn't want to be asked the hard questions. But, you know, we have Congress for a reason. A Congress represents the will of the people, and there has to be oversight of the president. And in this particular situation, I just respectfully ask my good friends on the other side of the aisle, do they believe the president should be subject to any laws, rules, or regulations, or whether his power should be completely unchecked? And in this case, we cannot go to war with Iran. We can't have another endless war in the Middle East.
I want to move back, though, to something that Congressman Kinzinger said, which is that Iran has been very provocative in Iraq, right? I mean, they've been on the wrong side of the ledger for us in fighting us and funding these militias, and they certainly had something to do with the embassy incursion last week. Then there was the question that always remains about their behavior in Syria and how it pertains to what's going on, even in East Africa. So the question is, when's enough enough? I think that's what Congressman Kinzinger is making the argument about. What's your take?
I think that we should always protect ourselves, have proportionate responses. In this particular case, you should know that, and I think your listeners probably know, that Iran has wanted us out of the region for years. ISIS has wanted us out of the region for years. In killing Soleimani, we are potentially getting Iraq to expel us from Iraq, the very objective that Iran and ISIS have shared for years. And what do we do in that situation? Well, we lose a foothold from which we fight ISIS, who presents a clear and present threat to America, and we may, again, blunder into a war with Iran. That is not strategy. That's not good strategy, and that's not thinking out the consequences of our actions.
If you had to guess where this is going to go, what would you guess?
I don't know.
Will cooler heads prevail, I guess, is my question more directly.
Well, I think it depends. I wish that the president would tweet less at this point. I think that his provocative tweets only unify the Iranians. I think one of the ironies here is that, you know, before this killing of Soleimani, there were protests against the Iranian government, even as late as last week. And what has happened now is that the Iranians are unified, and we and our allies are divided. And that's not how it should be. Therefore, I think the president should tweet less. I think that members of the administration should do whatever they can to de-escalate. We obviously have to protect our personnel and our assets throughout the region. And of course, we in Congress have to assert our authority with regard to the War Powers Act. And there will be a vote later this week, I'm told, with regard to a War Powers resolution on Iran. I think Democrats will be united. I would not be surprised if some Republicans joined us as well.
All right. Congressman, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That was Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy, and then right before that, Adam Kinzinger, also a congressman, Republican, Democrat, telling you their thoughts on everything that happened over the weekend. We've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.
What new audio, video gizmos and high-tech toys will you be seeing in stores later this year? A preview of the Consumer Electronics Show. Bob Surratt, WGN Mornings, 5 to 9.
And I promised it. Here it is. 19th caller, 312-981-7200, rips us off for a pair of tickets. See the Hawks take on the Ducks on Saturday. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heat, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Four Seasons, find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. And tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of tickets from Four Seasons. The Hawks are back quite a bit this week. They got Tuesday, yeah, tomorrow night, which apparently we're going to, do we all agree we're going to be at that game now?
I guess we got to be.
Yes,
check my schedule. It's open. I'm in.
All right. Then they're at home Thursday and then Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Michael, Thursday as well.
Might have to do that, too.
Like
what would stop us from doing that? Yeah, that's important to do.
It is the Predators.
Yes. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what I was thinking about over the weekend? Is how Nashville went from not having anything that counted in terms of sports teams to now having a pretty good football team, I'd say.
Well, they went on the road, beating Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they've got and they got the Predators. But then I think, well, they don't have basketball. Like we do.
We barely do. Go Blue Demons, I guess.
And then they don't have baseball, and I'm just hoping and praying that they don't continue to have baseball, because there's a lot of rumors.
That would be a great baseball town.
Shh, Kevin.
Shh.
Sorry.
They already have music. Let them just keep the music.
Yeah, safe. Right. That's what they do in the summers. Yeah, they're already talking about building a stadium and then trying to get a team out of a city that has two already.
Never going to happen.
Okay.
Famous last words. Damn it, I shouldn't have said that. Don't mark
Kevin,
the tape.
Now you already know who's coming after you. It will be me.
Yeah.
You jinxed it.
All right. So anyway, that's the... I love going to Nashville. I think it's really fun for a weekend or, you know, whatever it is, a couple days in the middle of the week. And then in the summer, it's spectacular. In the fall, it's beautiful.
Yeah, pretty much every day is the same in Nashville.
I know, the first time I went was on a road trip, and it was like a Tuesday night. We stopped, and it was party.
Yep.
I was getting after it.
It doesn't stop in Nashville.
No.
It is fun, and it's great restaurants, great culture. And every once in a while, you see, like, Nicole Kidman walking down the street. And you're like, how the hell did that happen? As they used to say, it's Hollywood for Republicans. But it's just not right that they're that all of a sudden, you know, like we're sitting here, we invented the NFL and we're sitting at home. All right, Ed Obradovich is going to join us in a few minutes. If you think I'm animated about it, wait till you hear what he has to say about it. And as Ben Bradley pointed out, yes, there's a lot going on in the world. Right, there's a lot of things. There's there's domestic intranquility, and there's international unrest, and all of those things.
I texted Ro a few nights ago. What does this all mean? What's going to happen?
And I'm like, what? You mean the Bears?
I'm like, no.
What are they going to do about Trubisky? As a matter of fact, I know
Ro's panicking about the sports. I'm panicking about what's going on around the world.
I'm just trying not to think about any of it.
I did. I took a break.
You?
Did
yeah.
you? From the news cycle?
From the news.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's impressive. Wait, did like you lose power or something?
No, I chose to do this. I wanted to see if I could actually not turn on the news channels. Mm-hmm. And I avoided in my news feed reading things that were, you know, about
alarming.
That were about whether it was impeachment or anything. I figured once they all get back, that'll all work out, right? I'll figure that out when it happens. But then, you know, then there was the airstrike, you know, and killing the Iranian general. And so I sort of reengaged over this weekend, also getting ready for this. But it was very nice. It was very refreshing to sort of just put myself on a sort of a Washington free diet.
You got to step away for a bit sometimes. It's a lot of negativity. It's a lot of stress. And it takes a toll.
Yeah. So I did. And I had the holidays with my family.
Any tales from the Khan family celebrations over the past few weeks?
You know what? It was actually incredibly tame.
That's good.
By relative standards. No fights broke out.
No chairs were thrown at anyone?
No chairs were thrown. You know, one of the things I did is I made it all happen in public. You know, most of the events happened at restaurants so that everybody sort of had to be on their best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out, you know, for the most part.
Smart.
Yeah.
Okay. You treated it like a breakup.
That's
not a bad idea.
Right. Do the breakup at a diner so nobody loses their you-know-what.
Right. Exactly. So that's it. So that's that. So it worked out. It was, you know, it was rather fulfilling, I suppose, because anytime it's not a disaster, I consider it to be an incredible...
Call it a win.
Yeah, it's a win.
Well, next thing you're going to tell us is that you had no ailments over the stretch.
No, that
either.
Did not happen.
Oh.
I had...
We
I
almost
did.
Had a whole
no,
clean
No, I had a little ailment, but I'm...
Self-induced?
I had that, too.
Oh, it's separate.
Yes, I had that, too. Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here after 5 o'clock. He would be able to confirm that. We were working over those 2 weeks. We released another episode of the podcast about movies, and this is the 20 movies to watch in 2020, which is available where all fine podcasts are. You can look up Ro Khan or Richard Roper, and you can find that there. And it is... And then I had to get ready for the Golden Globes. Then I had an unspeakable incident last night during the Golden Globes, where I had my wine refrigerator go out. That is the most privileged sentence ever, ever spoken by a human being, and I'm ashamed of it. I am ashamed that I have a wine refrigerator and was upset that it went out during the Golden Globes. I am upset about all of that. I feel like I need, and you know what's
real strong?
But it was funny because earlier yesterday, a priest called me and asked me to do something. I'm not kidding. On a Sunday, a priest called me and asked me to do something for a charity. And I'm like, it's gonna, and I thought, okay, all right, I'll do it. And then later on in the evening, I had this problem. I'm like, I'm not doing enough charitable work. I'm going to have to do a lot more to deserve the things that have happened that are good. All right, let's check in now. Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roads and the skies? And then OB, Ed Obradovich, joins us. Here's our guy, Chicago Bears legend, Ed Obradovich, joins us right now. It's the end of the season. It's all over. I know there's a lot of people recapping, and people are like, why are you recapping? Season is over. But I would like to just recap the emotions, if I just could, for a second, OB. I'm watching the playoffs yesterday. Oh, actually, Saturday and Sunday. Great games, by the way. Great games.
We were spoiled over the weekend.
Yeah, both in the AFC and the NFC. But I noticed something, OB. I noticed that three of the quarterbacks, really, the Bears passed on. But two, they directly passed on in the Trubisky draft year by trading up to get Mitchell Trubisky second from their already third-place position, which would have been just fine. And they left Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson on the board for other people to take. And those guys are playing next Sunday in the divisional round.
It's the son of a Mitch Bull.
Well, let me give you some kind of an answer. Just what you're speaking about. They're playing with those young quarterbacks. This year, we ranked 32nd in yards per pass. We ranked 31st in yards per play. Do you understand? There's only 32 teams in the league. All right? And this is at the end of this kid's, this is the third year he's been in the league, supposedly a genius coach in Nagy, and we rank 32nd in yards per pass and 31st in yards per play. And another thing that's a little disheartening, you wonder why we are where we are. In the year 2018, we went 12-4, and we had the 32nd easiest schedule. Again, there's only 32 teams. Nobody had an easier schedule than us. We went 12-4. We get blown out. We lose the game at home against Philadelphia. This year, we had the 12th easiest schedule. We wind up 8-8. But those are alarming statistics, guys. I don't care. We're basically at the bottom almost on every category in offense. But those two things, 32nd yards per pass, and 31st in yards per play. You can't get any worse than that, gentlemen.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. You can.
How?
You can be 32nd in both. That's how.
OB, outside of trying to figure out some sort of way to make Mitch Trubisky even an average quarterback, what would you say is the biggest pressing need for the Bears to address position-wide this offseason?
Well, here, what the Kevin, obviously they're not, if you listen to that, excuse me, their press conference between Nagy and Pace, they're not going to get rid of Trubisky. He's going to be our quarterback come hell or high water. They're not going to make any changes. They will not bring anybody in here to threaten that kid. They're going to shove this kid down everybody's throat and hope and pray to God that it works. Now, it's not going to work. Because if Nagy sticks to what he has done his first 2 years, his game setup and his game calling does not fit the way Mitch Trubisky should play quarterback in the NFL. You've got, if you want that kid to be a success, you've got to get him out of the pocket. Why? He's not a pocket passer. He's not an accurate passer. He has difficulty breaking down defenses. He cannot find his second, his third, or his fourth receiver. That is just a fact. So how do you break that up? How do you get him out of that? Move him out of the pocket. Let him run a little bit more. Let him see if he can read his players, read his receivers a little bit more. And that is the only way you're going to do it. And the last two games, Kevin, the last two games, you had the perfect opportunity to go and open up a wide open offense. Just let it go. Come hell or high water, it doesn't matter. Let it go. Let's see what the kid can do. And they didn't do it. He stuck to his same damn drop back packet. Pocket quarterback, which the kid cannot handle because he's not accurate and he has difficulty reading defenses.
Well, the biggest issue that the Bears are going to have in the offseason here is they have to shore up the offensive line. Kyle Long is now retiring, right? So that leaves a hole. Obviously, he wasn't playing this season because of the injury. But you saw that the offensive line just is not as good. As you're watching these other teams that are proficient with their quarterbacks, they definitely have a better offensive line. They're not perfect, some of these teams, but they have a better offensive line than the Bears have. Is there anybody out there that you think of that they should go after in free agency, or should they trade up for a draft pick?
Well, Ro, that's a heck of a question. I don't know right offhand who is available in free agency on the other 31 teams, but that the only way you could fix this for next year is you got to get lucky in the draft. In other words, your number one, number two, number three draft choices, you got to go offensive line. We've got running backs. We've got some quality receivers. If you're going to make Trubisky better, you got to shore up that offensive line. So your first three picks should be for the offensive line. Then go into free agency. See if you can find a center. Okay? Yeah. See if you can find a guard. See if you can find a couple of tackles. Can you do that? Yes, you can. You can do it through the draft and free agency, but you got to concentrate on the offensive line because otherwise, offensively, I think we're fairly decent, but our offensive line is a killer.
Would you go after, I'm going to ask this question, it's a ridiculous question, I'm going to ask it anyway. Tom Brady will be available to the highest bidder. He probably does not want to come to Chicago. The odds-on favorite, everybody thinks he's going to the Chargers out to L.A. because that's where Giselle wants to be anyway. That's where their business is, and he gets to walk shirtless in the ocean. It's 12 months out of the year, so he would enjoy that.
My opinion, he's going to stay in New England. My God, after all those years of all those world championships, my God, what is it, 6-7, and what he's done, and as the owner has done, the coach has done, and for him to walk away now, and what, you're going to play another year, another 2 years? I think he's got to stay there, and they've got to work through it, and I think that's what they're going to do. I would not want to see him go anywhere. Just stay there, Tom, and play it out, because, buddy, you're the GOAT. You're the best. You're the best.
Oh God! Although I gotta say, I'm very excited that they're not in the playoffs this year anymore. Because it does open it up. I would really love to see Kansas City play well. Houston is amazing to watch, and let's just face it, Baltimore. Oh my gosh, that kid is so. That's the thing that is so galling and so horrifying for me is you have these young quarterbacks they were making the point in the game yesterday when they weren't talking about a double doink. Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels were talking about this, that the power structure of the AFC has changed. The great quarterbacks in the AFC now is this next generation up. It's no longer, you know, Pittsburgh and New England, right? This is a whole new crop of kids, and they can run the ball, they can pass the ball, they can throw across their chest. They're incredible athletes.
That's exactly correct. And they've got an owner, a general manager, a head coach, offensive coordinator, position coaches that understand that. That you got to work. You draft somebody and you got to bring them in. You can't change the kid all the way he's played football through high school, through college, and you bring him in here and you got to change him mentally and physically. I mean, come on, where are you going with that? You're going backwards. You got to go forwards with this kid. And what do you see these kids? You see Patrick Mahomes? What does he do? How many times you see him bootleg, bro? Kevin, bootleg, sprint outs. He does everything. So does Deshaun Watson. And you've got to play to their strengths. And that's what Nagy has to do. Play to Trubisky's strength, which is get that poor kid out of the pocket, and let's see what the hell he can do on the run.
Who's going to be in the Super Bowl?
Oh, Lord. I'm not, this is one of my strong points. I'm going to take the Packers and Baltimore.
Yep. That is my pick, exactly.
Packers and Baltimore. Packers and it's going to be a young kid going against the older guy.
Yep.
And we'll see who's standing.
I think Baltimore wins that game. Baltimore's got a pretty good, pretty stout defense, too. Baltimore's a beautifully constructed team. They are so much fun to watch. Although I have to say, Houston, you know, they've had some injuries. They're not playing at their best. I hate to bet against Patrick Mahomes, but I just don't feel like Kansas City has the momentum that they had last year.
So. I'll tell you what. But they had Deshaun Watson. He had a horrible first half the other day. Mm-hmm. Came out the second half. What were they losing? 16-0, something like that.
Yeah, and he came back. Yeah.
And this kid came back. So you got to be careful. These young kids are so damn good today, so smart, and they can break down defenses because they understand.
Yes, I understand. Oh God, I gotta go, OB. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you around draft time. Thank you.
Healthy one. Bye.
Bye. All right. We got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom into
legalized pot and driving. Oh, did we really think this thing through? Let's talk about it. I'm Anna DeVlantis at 1 p.m.
WGN. It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. It is time now for the first top five at five of the year 2020. I'm assuming Noonan didn't do a top five at five. I don't know that for sure.
Actually, he did.
He did?
Yeah.
What?
Sorry.
What?
Not nearly as good as you did.
All right. Okay. I could sue him for that.
It was like the generic brand. It's, you know.
he called it the half of 10 at half past 5, I believe. Sorry. It's a different thing.
Thank you, Richard Roper.
There you go.
Thank you for coming out. We're going to take a little Golden Globes reaction and get ready for the Oscars.
Yes.
Because we learned some things. Because the Oscars are like in 3 weeks, right?
Coming
three and
up,
a half weeks.
Coming up right around the corner.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. They're the earliest they've ever been. But there's a reason for that. We'll explain that coming up. And also some of the stupidity that happened at the Golden Globes. So that, as a matter of fact, that brings me to
number five.
So the 77th annual edition of the Golden Globes. Who knew that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association was that old? 77 years ago, weren't they trying to deport the Hollywood Foreign Press? I'd have been like, you can't be here. We're at war with your country. You'd have thought that. All right. It was hosted by Ricky Gervais, again, a foreigner, except he was an ally.
Yeah.
Fifth time he's done it. And the whole bit here is that he's kind of a jerk, right? He's drunk and
he's irreverent.
Jerk.
He'll spit right in Hollywood's face.
He doesn't care what it is. He's going to tell it like it is. Mm-hmm. And this year he says it was his last.
Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show, a superb drama. Yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg.
All right, now that's a very excellent point.
Yeah.
But it turns out that people did not listen to his advice.
Yeah.
So let's go immediately to the first award of the night, and it's Russell Crowe, who the first major acting award of the night was Russell Crowe winning, right, for his portrayal of Roger Ailes.
Right.
In the made-for-TV version of that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So he couldn't be there because he was helping his family in Australia, right, which is a climatological disaster, according to everybody at the Golden Globes last night. Mm-hmm. Talk about being woke. So Jennifer Aniston, who was presenting the award, had to read the statement from Russell Crowe. Here you go.
Russell Crowe could not be here with us tonight because he is at home in Australia.
protecting his family from the devastating bushfires. He sent along this message in case he won. Make no mistake, the tragedy unfolding in Australia is climate change based. We need to act based on science, move our global workforce to renewable energy, and respect our planet for the unique and amazing place it is. That way, we all have a future. Thank you.
Awkward.
I wish she had actually said it like Russell Crowe. Like, no mistake. Like, as the gladiator. Although, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, it's like 20% of Australia.
He's right, but you could sense the uncomfortability.
Oh, my God. The look on her face. She was like, oh no.
What happened to Reese Witherspoon was next to her when she presented the award. Reese cuts kind of legally blonded out of there. Jen's looking around going like,
help me.
Then there was Michelle Williams.
I know my choices might look different than yours, but thank God or whomever you pray to that we live in a country founded on the principle that I am free to live by my faith and you are free to live by yours. So women, 18 to 118, when it is time to vote, please do so in your own self-interest. It's what men have been doing for years, which is why the world looks so much like them. But don't forget, we are the largest voting body in this country. Let's make it look more like us.
Here we go. Okay, you're winning an award.
I completely zone out when
it's only a Golden Globe, too. Yeah.
Right.
There's only 90 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press. You need 25 votes. So 25 schlubs from across the pond think you were great in some limited series where you get paid $1 million an episode. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Now, coming up, when we talk about the Golden Globes, I do want to play part of the acceptance speech from Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was actually indecipherable. There was a moment where I know that at the Golden Globes, they drink during the presentation and all that. I just didn't understand a word of what was going on. All right, we'll get to the four, the three, the two, and the one. But first, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and the skies?
Chicago's very own Radio Chicago WGN.
For news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Top 5-5 continues. We're up to
number 4.
Didn't seem far enough. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says that the House is going to vote on a war powers resolution limiting the president's military ability to act, or the ability to order military actions. Earlier today, we talked to two members of Congress about this issue. Adam Kinzinger, a Republican, who says that the military strike was completely appropriate.
This was the right thing to do, and this pearl clutching that is happening about what will Iran do next, I don't know. Let's look at the history of what they've done, and that'll give us the roadmap, because they would do it anyway. And I think this was the right move. We don't know where this is going to go, but this idea that now if this escalates, it's a result of the United States of America, is completely untrue, completely false, and I think it's time that we get out of this crisis of confidence and start defending Americans before we defend the Iranian government.
And here's Democrat Raja Krishnamurthy, also from Illinois, on why the Gang of Eight, those are the House and Senate leaders who are part of the intelligence phalanx, who are generally briefed on all of these things, why that Gang of Eight were not briefed on the strike.
And I think that the reason why he didn't go to the Gang of Eight or to Congress beforehand is because he did not want that evidence to be scrutinized with regard to the quote-unquote imminent plot involving Soleimani. He didn't want to be asked the hard questions. We have Congress for a reason. A Congress represents the will of the people, and there has to be oversight of the president. And in this particular situation, I just respectfully ask my good friends on the other side of the aisle, do they believe the president should be subject to any laws, rules, or regulations, or whether his power should be completely unchecked? And in this case, we cannot go to war with Iran. We can't have another endless war in the Middle East.
All right. Well, it's happy Monday, everybody. Checking in at
number 3.
Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza has announced, this is good news for somebody, I'm not quite sure who, that next month they will stop helping municipalities collect fines for red light camera tickets. Woo! This new policy goes, not that I've ever had one of these.
No.
Not that I've ever sped through a school zone. with women with baby carriages pushing them across the street. I basically, when I drive to work, it's like The French Connection, if you've ever seen that movie.
Did you just think they were sending you pictures of your car that people enjoyed?
Here's
your phone. Here's your car again.
I always hit a fruit stand on my way to work. I don't know why that is. Anyway, the point of this is that the General Assembly allowed municipalities to use the state comptroller's office to collect debts by withholding of state income tax refunds and other state payments. They're like, what? What? Now, I always paid. Not that I got them, but if I were, this is a theoretical, were I to have received a red light camera or speeding camera ticket, I would pay it almost immediately.
Right. I see you showing up at like Mike Monaco and a bunch of attorneys.
Your Honor. I have done that.
Mr. Kahn, what are you doing here? I'd like to cite
have you ever
Kronberg versus Johnson, 1923, Kansas.
I have taken a lawyer to traffic court before. That was not good. Anyway, the point is, judges don't like that. Now, the state does not collect for the Chicago red light cameras, though, or speeding cameras. There you have to go to the phony baloney court on Superior Street here in Chicago. Mm. That's like a, I mean, they literally have kangaroos in the hallways there. That's how irrelevant that court really is. Sometimes you sit down and it's actually a kangaroo that's hearing the case with a hat that says guilty on it. All right, here's the comptroller.
A local official who told the Sun-Times that he gets a cut of every fine paid on a red light camera ticket issued by a town where he helped set up the contract with the red light camera company that he worked on the side as a consultant. It stinks and it's rotten. We can't tolerate the practice of municipal employees directly pocketing cash from contracts that they arrange. That should raise red flags for everyone, and it has to stop. My office is doing its part to end it.
Okay. We should get her on the phone, because I would like to talk about who the hell is that who gets to
broker the deal. Wet his beak, and he tells us on times.
Right. Broker the deal and then take a piece of it.
Yeah, good deal.
Get her on the blower. All right.
She was just making yellow lights during that whole interview, you could tell.
Well, I like the reality of the sound of the cars blowing through red lights in the background.
It's cool.
And she was doing it by a red light camera.
Yeah.
So the thing's just going off the whole time. You can always tell. We actually, our view here from the WGN studios, we look down Columbus Avenue in one of our views, and there's a red light camera at the bridge. I think it's a Grand and Columbus, and it goes off at night. All you see is this thing go off. It's so bright.
And the entire studio flashes like a giant camera just went off.
We're on the 18th floor.
Yeah.
It's like an Earth, Wind, and Fire concert, a strobe light, 1977.
You know what's amazing, though, me, is that feeling you get when you see that in your rearview mirror.
Oh, yeah, you know they got you.
Ah, it's like, oh, damn it!
Yeah, you can't go back. Some people say, I'll stop now. Doesn't erase it.
Checking in at
number two.
Oh, a new tax went into effect this morning. Takes aim at congestion in Chicago. Mm. Well, it's cold and flu season. See what he did there? Oh, dear.
There he is. First awful. Of the year.
That was awful. It's going to affect you if you rely on Lyft or Uber to get around town. It's a $1.25 tax added to a single passenger trip into the city from the suburbs. Now, that drops to 65 cents if you're in a shared ride, which I refuse to do, because then I have to sit next to people I don't know.
Ooh.
I barely like to sit next to people I know.
It might take you longer to get there.
Imagine looking on their faces when they climb in and Roe Khan's already in the car.
I'll take the next one.
Doing one of his characters.
Now, they're also, if you're heading downtown, it's a $3. If you're in this downtown district, which is basically everywhere from Roosevelt to North Avenue and then out west to the expressways.
Okay.
If you're down there, it's an extra $3 per trip. $3 on just automatically. $3 on top of whatever you're going to do, unless, again, you're in a shared ride and then it's like $1.65 or something, or $1.75. Still, they don't want to give you the half off. They're going to give you, that's, you know what, you're going to get 40% off. We can't do the full 50% off for that. But you're going to have to sit next to somebody who's going in a totally different direction.
Do that on a Saturday night. It's really fun, the shared ride, because you get like Becky Lynn, Amy Lynn, and Tammy Lynn all yelling at each other about where they're going to go next. So random.
All right. Here is what... who is this from, by the way? So I can... Yes, but from what media... From what media agency? ABC7. Oh. Thank you. This is ABC7 talking to some of the people who are being taxed.
Every year, always is so expensive. I mean, we have a lot of businesses leaving Illinois anyways because of all the taxes. And, you know, it's just getting harder and harder to live here.
And I get that, and I think that it does, it will help, like, alleviate some of the congestion, but I am less likely to share rides just because I've had some bad experiences with that.
Uber and Lyft, I think, are sort of a luxury, so... It's something that I would support, even though it's probably going to cost me some extra money on a day-to-day basis.
I do like the slackerism that goes on here.
Those are all the people I was just talking about.
Right. Who are like, okay, this sucks. I hate it. I'm still going to do it, though. Right? Because I don't want to get on the bus because there's people on the bus. I mean, it's
expensive.
She knows she's got us here with this.
It is insane how congested downtown is, though.
True.
I don't know if this is going to fix it, but it is something that needs to be addressed.
Take one of those guys that's got the bicycle and the little carriage in the back.
Actually, those
guys
really
are fun.
Are they fun, though.
Are they expensive?
Yeah, would leave a Bears game in that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like $100 to get to the party. I know.
They all line up outside Soldier. So then all the drunks are like, this will be hilarious. Let's get on the bike. That'll be $100, sir.
Dang.
I really got to pee. Do you know where there's a porta potty? Take me to a porta potty. Not that I've ever said that to one of those guys.
Ah! Ooh, that'd be the perfect combination. A porta potty on wheels with two seats in the front.
Yeah, that's not a mess at all.
Number one.
Okay. Would you like to hear Gronk sing a Lady Gaga song?
Yes.
No.
No is the answer, but we're going to do it anyway. He was backstage at the Kelly Clarkson show, and, he tried it.
You and I, baby, I'd rather die without you and I.
He sounds like one of those dogs that's howling when a fire truck or an ambulance goes by.
Or there's now on YouTube, you can find dogs that are singing along like that. Oh, here's what the real song sounds like if you're not familiar. Does that in any way, shape, or form sound like what he did?
No.
Nope.
You and I, baby, I'd rather die.
Now that he's retired somewhat.
Yeah. Got out just in time without getting concussed.
I say they could have used him.
I don't know, is he drunk or concussed? Yeah. Which is it?
Yeah. Do you think that was his special song with TB12, you and I?
In the showers after Patriots games?
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well,
good start to the year.
Wasn't there talk he's going to come out of retirement?
Gronk, he kind of alluded that it could happen.
That's the thing that football players are doing these days, haven't you noticed?
Yeah.
Well, Marshawn Lynch, they asked him, the Seattle Seahawks literally begged him to come out of retirement because every one of their running backs has a broken hip or leg.
True. Fair, but who else was it? The Cowboys, what's his name, that came back?
Jason Witten.
Yes,
Witten. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, his failed broadcasting career.
He sucked so bad in the broadcast booth.
Jay Cutler's only 36. Did 10 pull-ups in the first episode of Very Cavallari Season 3. Looks like he's in shape.
Just letting everybody know he can still do it.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
The top five at five.
Richard Roper tells us about the Golden Globes, but first, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Rokan Show, right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper is joining us, as he has for the last 37 minutes. Because I do his timesheets for him, so I just want to make
Thank
sure
you.
I get this
Appreciate that.
Worked out. All right. Let's talk about the Golden Globes last night. Award shows have changed a lot since we were kids. Award shows used to be 16 and a half hours. long speeches by nearly dead actors were getting honorary awards for all of their work. I'll never forget when Charlie Chaplin came out on stage Oscars in the 1970s, and I thought, isn't he dead? Yeah. And he was. He died on the stage.
Oh, gosh. Bob Hope was always the host.
Yes, for years. Exactly. And you were like, it would go on, and they would all joke about how long it was. Mm-hmm. Well, they still joke about it. It's not that it's so much shorter, but it moves at a much less exciting pace. It seemed like the Golden Globes didn't build up to anything last night, even though they have a host, unlike all the other award shows, because if you have a host, that host has to be completely controversy-free.
The Globes are all over the place, too, because they have TV categories that are, you know, they mix movies with limited series, and then in the movies, they have best drama, and then best musical or comedy. Then they have best actor and actress in a drama and musical and comedy. But then when they get to the supporting characters, they say, I just want supporting actor. They're not consistent. You can tell it's just 90 goofs who make up the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, making it up as they go along. And then the Carol Burnett Award, which is awesome, you think, oh, that's what a legendary comedy award. It's the second annual. They just started doing that last year, which is cool. So, and Ellen DeGeneres was the winner of the Carol Burnett Award.
So is it one for a boy, one for a girl, or one for...
The comedy award is just one person, but for the acting, there's two best actors. So Taron Egerton, our friend, won for Rocket Man. That was very cool. He was the only one that was actually in a musical in the category of comedy and or musical. And then Joaquin Phoenix won for Joker.
I'll get to him in just a second.
Yeah. So
it was nice to see Rocket Man, which is, I think, one of those great biopics about music ever. Yeah, and as was pointed out in our Best Movies of the Decade podcast, which you can find now on everywhere. Apple Podcasts and
Spotify,
all the rest.
Spotify, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. Yeah.
There was a movie that came out a year before that was about a band called Queen that people might be familiar with that Richard absolutely hated.
You know, it's been playing on cable a lot lately, and you click across it, and it's shockingly bad every time you jump in, and how cheesy it is. And I tuned in the other day as they were all mad at Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek, a great actor who won for best actor for playing Freddie Mercury, and they're all mad at him because he came in late and he made decisions without him. You know, the band, the classic thing. And as he was fighting with Brian May, the bass player started going doom doom doom, started acting as if he had just thought of Another One Bites the Dust as they're fighting. Doom, 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 doom. And then they start looking at each other. I'm going to say the lyrics now, and this is going to be a hit. And I'm like, it's like a bad episode of The Monkees.
It's a really awful movie. Mm. Rocket Man, on the other hand, is a musical fantasy, but it is great. And it tells the story of Elton John in a way that Rolling Stone or somebody just announced, you know, he's the male artist of the century. Right. So,
wow.
And that is, and it deserves it based on everything he's done. So he then last night wins an award.
Taron Egerton won.
Well, no, Elton John wins a writing award for the song, for their original song they wrote. He and Bernie Taupin, who was his longtime collaborating lyricist, 52 years they have been together.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's the first time they have ever won an award together.
That was amazing when I heard that. I couldn't believe it.
They should have like 70 Grammys. They should have all the Grammys, right?
Right. They never won a songwriting Grammy.
That's insane.
Together. Think about that. You think for Rocket, the song Rocket Man.
Wow.
I got to go back and look at all those different. Those were great years that, 1972, 3,
winners,
4, 5,
Eagles
6.
And Stevie Wonder and
no question.
The likes.
But still.
But very cool for Taron Egerton to win. The film's going to get overlooked come the Oscar time. Just because Bohemian Rhapsody, it's like, oh, we're not going to nominate a similar film, even though it's not really a similar film.
Well, you can tell the Hollywood Foreign Press is very interested in all of the stuff that is very international.
They like that Fleabag.
Yeah.
They enjoy the Fleabag. But I thought they got, I thought they got a lot of things right. We loved Russell Crowe in The Loudest Voice, who did win for playing Roger Ailes. Aquafina was the first Asian actress to win best actress for The Farewell, and she's brilliant and deserves an Oscar nomination. That
you actually
great.
Called that in the Best Movies of the
I
Day.
Did.
just get that in again.
And I love that. And Parasite, which is a great film, which is going to win Best Foreign Language Film, won. Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Best Supporting Actor. All these were very strong choices.
I'm going to wait to the other side of the commercial break to actually play the Joaquin Phoenix speech. I think we should play it. Do we have it in its entirety?
Ooh,
reportedly scared the Joker watching at home. We said, that guy's nuts. He's dangerous.
I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. But it was a moment.
Yeah.
And the Golden Globes also, because there was a football game on NBC right beforehand. There, mm-hmm. you don't get the standard kind of run up with, you know, like a faked up who wore it better on the runway show and all the pre-promotion that you get for the other award shows, whether it's the Oscars or the Screen Actors Guild Awards are coming up in a couple of weeks.
If that game went into overtime, they're going to have to go to a split screen.
Well, I don't think they would have pushed back, right? Don't they push back?
I think they would have told everybody at the Golden Globes, keep drinking and wait.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's interesting. Chicagoans may know this reference. There's a guy, very famous gate crasher, goes to all the parties, gets kicked out all the time. Chicago, when he goes to international things, he shows up in the middle. I think it was at the Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump summit. I mean, he's one of those guys who's always there. He's like Zelig. And he was at the Golden Globes last night.
He's still doing it.
I thought he'd retired from that.
He's been doing it for four years. Jerry Burling. Yeah. Super Bowl. I mean, amazing. All the things. OJ trial, you'd see him. I mean, crashed everything. Right. I still don't know how he does it.
He's a performance artist of some sort.
It's amazing.
Yeah. All right. Let's check in now with Lauren. What's happening in the roads and the skies? Rokan Show. Richard Roper is with us today talking about the Golden Globes. And something happened last night at the Golden Globes that was scarier than the movie that was actually being honored. Joaquin Phoenix won for Best Actor for his portrayal of
Joker.
The Joker, but the character's name, I can't remember. That was Ansel Adams
Arthur,
or something.
Arthur Fleck.
Arthur Fleck, right.
Ansel Adams, a great painter.
Yes.
But this was a dark origin story about the character. Was deeply disturbed, you know, R-rated, you know, not
and
a
his descent
movie.
Into madness.
Descent into madness,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
brilliant work by Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes,
about that. He's a great actor,
right? I mean, and he comes from this amazing Hollywood legacy too. His you know brother famously died on Hollywood Boulevard, right?
River Phoenix, yeah, great actor, young actor, that was tragic. Right outside the Viper Room.
Yep. And this, and so, you know, he was going to carry on. And then, as you will recall, he was doing in the like, mid-2000s, he was portraying himself as a different person. He would go on these talk shows.
Joaquin? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Did these weird documentaries and almost famously kicked David Letterman on the air and was just, you know, people couldn't tell if it was performance art, Andy Kaufman-esque, or if he had really gone over.
Right.
The deep end.
And that was the whole point was, is he really crazy? That was, so they wanted to make a documentary. Is he crazy or is it,
what
was this whole thing
put on?
Right. Mm-hmm. So it turns out it was kind of a little bit of both. And then last night I decided, really, it was one more than the other.
First, I'd like to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press for recognizing and acknowledging the link between animal agriculture and climate change. It's a very bold move making tonight plant-based. And it's
really wait, I stop it right there for a second. Hold on. I mean, think about the vast percentage of America that goes, oh, what the? Edith, turn that thing off. I mean, there was a lot of that last night. There was just a ton of political reaction. And I just, you know, I always think about how if this were, you know, like at the MAGA Awards or whatever, when people were going to be getting up and making the speech, it's sort of like, you know what? I'm watching a movie, right? It's about a movie. It's not about, it's really not about.
The self-importance level is off the charts at the award show. No doubt about that.
To my fellow nominees, we all know there's no it's like this thing that is created to sell advertisements for the TV show. I'm inspired by you. I can't believe the beautiful, mesmerizing, unique work that you've all done this year. And I know people say this, but I really do feel honored to be mentioned with you. some of you I reached out to personally. Some I'm still a little too intimidated by, even though we share the same agent. Hi, Christian. You're not here, but that's it. And
Christian Bale reference there.
Todd, you were such an amazing friend and collaborator.
All right, stop right here. Stop about Todd Phillips, the director of The Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
I Is he all right? Is he drunk or nuts?
Well,
or both.
You know,
is it
something wondering. About plant based? And you know, there are edibles available in California too. And you know, I love when the actor says, you know, this is we're all winners, and that's not a competition. But they never give the trophy to the other guys that just lost. Here's my Golden Globe for you. These don't matter, but I'm taking this home. And getting it engraved immediately with my name because I won.
He was definitely slurring a little bit, and he even put the Golden Globe down. It was like he couldn't hold it and talk at the same time. There was a lot of weird things about the whole speech.
Stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
He was acknowledging his own persona and reputation as well for being kind of crazy.
Contrary to popular belief, I don't want to rock the boat, but the boat... it's really nice that so many people have come up and sent their well wishes to Australia, but we have to do more than that, right? It's such a beautiful gesture.
Here we go.
And I am a I have not always been a virtuous man. I'm learning so much, and so many of you in this room have given me multiple opportunities to try to get it right.
Okay, stop right there. So in other words, I have been a total jagbag on the set. I've delayed production. I've cost the studios money. I've done all these things, but I'm such a brilliant actor. You put up with me, and you keep asking me back. It's basically what he's saying there. All right. I think that that's the sort of thing that your agent goes over to the studio head and apologizes for. I don't know that we needed to watch it. Although, then you compare and contrast that to Tom Hanks, who is one of the most successful actors in the history of Hollywood, let alone his generation, probably the most successful actor of his generation. Is a producer, is a maker of not only great narrative films, but great documentary series, and pays tribute to moments of great and less than great moments of American heroism. He did that decades series for CNN. People don't even realize that you know, 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, that whole thing. And you know, that's an unblinking look at American history. And he is a perfect gentleman. There's a meme around today that another woman has come forward to say that Tom Hanks is a nice guy, right? and it's like, you compare and you contrast that to this.
And as Charlize might know, and some of the other people who have worked with us through the Playtone Galaxy of Stars, showing up on time is one of the greatest liberating acts you can give yourself in a movie.
Joaquin.
That means those people with radios in the ears don't need to knock on your door and say they're ready for you. You're actually already ready, and you have the liberty and you have the freedom of being there early enough to settle down, because when the time comes, you have to hit the marks and you have to go there.
Calling out the prima donnas.
As a producer, he needs those people to know now. I'm sorry, I don't have time for that.
That's good.
In terms of the one of the things I think we should mention too, you absolutely loved, and Kevin just now watched last night, so this works out very nicely, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and it made bank last night
and won a bunch of Golden Globes. Screenplay. And the other big I think surprise was 1917 winning for Best Picture, and Sam Mendes winning, the director of 1917, winning Best Director. And I, you know, they could do worse than to give that film the Academy Award for Best Picture. It's one of the best movies about World War One ever made, and it's going to give it a boost at the box office for sure.
Do you think that throws a monkey wrench into the Oscars here? Because now, again, remember the Hollywood Foreign Press, you've got a lot of Europeans in the Hollywood Foreign Press, and World War One is a far more acknowledged event in Europe, because it's seen as the seminal moment of the 20th century. It's World War One and World War Two were just a continuum for them. There are two different things for us. We came in late into World War One, and therefore it's not such an is not an important American thing. And this is really about the British Army. This is not about the U.S.
Exactly. I think that, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Irishman, that might kind of split the vote of people that love Scorsese and Tarantino, two great filmmakers at the top of their game, and 1917 might end up kind of slipping through and actually winning Best Picture.
because the traditionalists will love that. You know, there's still an older voting block. The Academy's gotten younger and more diverse, but it's still more older white men, veterans who love, you know, and it's a great film also, but I could see that winning. It's a Best Picture kind of movie.
And the Oscars are coming up in just under 3 weeks. Under 4 weeks.
Yeah, the nominations will be announced a week from today. And then I think it's February 10th. I want to say second Sunday in February.
Right. And that's going to be it's the earliest it's ever been. There's a scheduling issue for that. Next year and the year after, they move it back to the end of February.
Mm.
So I know for people who, if you want to pull out your calendars now and know when Oscars 2021 and 2022 are, I'll get you the dates. But because they have to move for certain
Blood moon. There's a blood moon.
I don't know what it is.
They told Joaquin Phoenix it's March 1st, though, to the Academy. They just sent a new invite. Save the date, Joaquin.
Right. Don't worry about it. It's just fine. They should call Joaquin's agent, who apparently represents a lot of really great people in Hollywood, and tell him he should be in Guadalajara on a shoot.
Busy.
Right.
Gladiator 2.
Not available. All right. Well, it was very interesting, and I think it's going to make the whole award season, which is mercifully short this year. So
there you go.
And we will have, for those of you who've been downloading the podcast that we do about movies, we'll be looking at the Oscars in a 3 or 4 part series.
They'll be filling out the whole ballot at some point.
Yes.
For those of you who want to gamble on best short film and animated short and makeup, those are the categories you got to clean up in.
I can't imagine that people would want to gamble on anything, but just in case you do, we'll be helping you out. All right, that's all coming your way. Thank you, Richard, for being here.
Sure.
We got Blackhawks tickets in the 6 o'clock hour, and Suzanne Mendoza is going to join us to talk about this red light camera weirdness that's going on here. But first, let me tell you this: the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom comes right in too. Show. Right here, 720 WGN. Happy 2020 to everybody. Happy New Year. I can tell that 2020 is going to be great, if not interesting. Perhaps both.
New Year, same us.
That's right. That's what we like to say. We got Blackhawks tickets coming up, by the way. Coming up in just a few minutes, as a matter of fact. And speaking of the Blackhawks, we would like to congratulate one of our favorite Blackhawks, Dylan Secura, is on the Super Celebrity Hotline with us right now. And Dylan scored his first goal last night with our beloved Chicago Blackhawks in a decisive win over the dreaded, hated, feared, one of the great rivalries in hockey, Detroit Red Wings. Congratulations, Dylan.
Thank you guys very much, and thanks for having me.
So, that rivalry used to be the most important in Chicago. You know, and I'm sure you heard in the United Center last night a lot of Detroit sucks chanting that was going on. But now that Detroit has moved over to the Eastern Conference, you know, they only get to play a couple times a year. They like to stack up the preseason a little bit, which is kind of fun for Hawks fans. But it sort of lost a bit of its energy. Did the rivalry mean anything to you guys going into the game last night?
Not too much for me. It was pretty cool being out there. Kind of reminded of the old college atmosphere, you know, playing there. You had all this chants and the bands going and stuff like that. They're playing the old Motown music and stuff like that. So I think for a young guy like me, you watch that stuff growing up, and you know, everyone knows the original 16, so that's always pretty cool. But when both teams were at their best, there's some pretty good games there that, you know, even I as a kid remember watching.
Yeah.
Well, we're a little over a halfway point of the season, Dylan, and you guys are playing much better as of late. Over the past couple of weeks, you guys have won 4 of 5. You're still right there within striking distance of the postseason. You got Calgary tomorrow, which is they're 5 points ahead of you, and they have that second wild card. What's been working for you guys over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think we've been growing as a team here in the last week or two. We did a good job on the road. We're kind of playing the greasy road style that you need to win. And, we were being patient with that game. You know, we weren't, I think we're a team that can score a lot of goals. And, you know, sometimes it's about keeping it out of our net. So I think we've been doing a good job of staying patient. And, we got the guys to kind of capitalize on chances that we get as long as we don't give up too many. So, our goalies have both been great in this stretch as well. So hopefully we can keep it going.
Most goals scored yesterday were by young players such as yourself, as well as some 19-year-olds, a 22-year-old, 24-year-old. What can you say about your fellow teammates that are also kind of younger in the league?
Yeah, I think it's always good to get some contribution from throughout their lineup, and just happens to be the young guys, I guess, on a night like that. But yeah, it's pretty cool to see. I think as a younger player, it kind of helps to have other guys you're familiar with and surrounded by on a daily basis. And I think Chicago's a pretty unique spot because you have a little bit of mix of that, and then you have your veteran guys who have won the cups and done all the great things. So, you kind of learn from them, but at the same time, you have, guys, peers of your own age that you can talk to and relate to.
It's amazing, though. I mean, all the young players basically have the same reaction, that they pinch themselves because they were kids, in 2010, 13, 15, some of you guys, that, there's literally you're getting a pass from Jonathan Toews, or, you're changing lines with Patrick Kane. I mean, it just has to be a pinch me moment, right?
Yeah, I think throughout the last couple of years, there's been a couple of those moments for me. But, as you get closer with the guys off the ice and, kind of get comfortable playing in the NHL, that I think that stuff kind of goes away a little bit. But, there's always a part of you that remembers, cheering on Toews at the Olympics, or, watching Kane win Game 7, whatever it was. So
yeah.
There's definitely some moments like that, especially in Chicago, which is why I said it was so unique, because, not every team has guys like that, let alone four or five of them.
Dylan, give us a little hint about, for those of us who are watching the games, obviously the team's gelling better than you had been for the first, basically the second month of the season. But what is it that we should be looking for as observers of the game that shows us how, what's different here? What's gelling better?
Yeah, I think probably just consistency. I think there's even parts when I wasn't up, there's games where, you'd win one or two in a row, and then, I guess give the fans a little optimism, but then, kind of lay an egg the next game or drop a couple in a row after that. So I think something to look for is just consistency. I think over the last 6-7 games, we've done a really good job of, even if we're up in Vancouver, we ended up losing that game, but we're leading, and I thought we played a good road game, and we're pretty close to sweeping on the road. So I think, especially for a younger group of guys, it's important for us to be consistent every night, and our team do the same.
So now that goal number one is out of the way, can we expect number two, number three, maybe tomorrow? Is that okay?
I guess so. Everyone said that once you get one, they come in bunches, so I'm hoping that's the case.
All right, very good. Dylan Sekera, thank you so much. Congratulations on your first career goal with Blackhawks. Appreciate it, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you tomorrow night. And speaking of Blackhawks, on Saturday night, they're taking on the Ducks, and I've got a pair of tickets right now. Thanks to our friends at Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. Tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200. Lauren Lapka, what's happening on the roads and in the skies? It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, Susana Mendoza is the controller of the state of Illinois. A lot of people get confused by it and also don't know how to pronounce that, whether it's controller or comptroller. I'm going to go with comptroller, even though it's controller, right?
Whatever floats your boat.
I know. That's right. Yeah, thank you. Not the first time you said that. All right. Let me, we just played some, within 40 minutes ago, we played a piece of audio that I could not believe. You had a red light camera. Can we play this again? Can we play this in the top 5-5. I know I'm playing a tape of you in front of you, but I just want to understand exactly what it was that was said here, because you're announcing that the state is not going to be enforcing red light cameras, right? In terms of red light camera tickets from the suburbs, because the city handles their own, right? Is that how that goes?
Right. We do not collect on those ticket revenues for the city.
Right, but you do for other 16 municipalities. Right,
yeah.
Okay. And then you kind of drop something in the middle of all this that I my head started to spin.
A local official who told the Sun-Times that he gets a cut of every fine paid on a red light camera ticket issued by a town where he helped set up the contract with the red light camera company that he worked on the side as a consultant. It stinks, and it's rotten.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yes, and yes, and yes. And how did that happen?
So this is a statement, actually, that the individual gave to the Sun-Times. It's Commissioner Tobolsky's chief of staff. So, you know, complete political insider who on the side was consulting for Red Light Camera and essentially incentivized the system. While it may not be legal, I find it to be completely unethical and definitely morally bankrupt, right? So this individual is incentivized to put up as many, get as many approvals as possible for traffic lights and then gets a commission on every ticket that is issued. I mean, how wrong is that?
And they go to the municipality. Explain a little bit of how that works. So they go to, this guy goes to the municipality.
Yeah, and his boss happens to be the mayor of one of these townships that is in absolute federal scrutiny right now. I mean, the feds just took, I think it was, don't quote me on this, but around $50,000 out of a safe in his home, right? And his chief of staff has admitted that he was collecting revenue per ticket issued, and he was, you know, part and parcel in influencing the mayor as to where these lights should go. So, I mean, this was not public knowledge, but the minute it became public knowledge and the fact that this is happening leads me to believe that it's probably happening with other individuals as well. And you know, so many other things that are wrong with the red light camera system. But you add the corruption element to it, right? Or the absolute unethical behavior to it from public officials. And I think we have to put a stop to that without a doubt.
Okay. And now I know that I'm shocked to find gambling here in the casino. But this is just so like boldface, you know.
It's 100%.
It's amazing to me that he almost was bragging about it. Now, again, it's probably not illegal. Though, as you said, it probably should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, it's self-dealing. And essentially, as opposed to, and I remember when Rahm Emanuel, remember, he used to be the mayor, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he used to be the mayor of Chicago. He sort of famously would say, listen, the red light cameras, we're putting them up, it's for the kids, it's for safety, it's for the schools, it's always, you know, it is always what it is. But it really isn't. It's about revenue. And that's, and clearly you have a guy not just admitting it's about revenue, it's about revenue for him.
Exactly. I mean, think about, here's the startling reality of this is, look, in theory, this was originally passed because, you know, there was evidence to show that people who run red lights and it eats up police resources, and we want to make sure that the police are allocated in a way where they're not babysitting red light intersections, right? But that this would make it safer, that clearly there were intersections in the city of Chicago and other parts of the state where there were significant fatalities. So how this was originally pitched was this new technology that can make our streets safer. Clearly, it has, you know, ballooned into this like one-eyed monster, essentially. And now we see that there's all this potential, I'm going to say potential corruption because, you know, no one's been charged yet, but clearly massive lack of ethics involved here. And the more startling conclusion or evidence here is that 95% of all red lights issued are not for those vehicles that are running through an actual red light through, you know, from one part of the intersection through the other. But 95% of those tickets are for right turns, you know, right turns on red, where the individual doesn't come to a complete 3-second perfect textbook stop, turns right, and by the way, turns right on an intersection where it's legal to turn right on red, but doesn't make a perfect stop, and then that light goes off. You see those lights going off all the time, and honestly, you know, people are stopping, looking, turning. They don't maybe make that 3-second stop and they get nailed with a ticket. 95% of those.
And they're so confusing sometimes too.
Yep.
Can I turn here? Can I not turn here?
Yeah, especially
they don't make
in
it
the
clear
ones
sometimes.
That are. Yeah, and there's these ones that have designated like turn zones. They're like on a curve.
Mm-hmm.
And per statute, that light is supposed to be within the visual cone of the driver, and those lights are actually behind the driver. So when you turn right, there's no light ahead of you that gives you like the go-ahead that, hey, this is like one of those tricky intersections you have to be extra cautious at. And so people are getting ticketed left and right, and yeah, they don't even realize it.
Yeah, and it's cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching for the municipality and for the red light camera companies,
yeah,
and for the lobbyists who got them through.
And there's also like an equity issue here. I mean, if you think about the fact that, I mean, I do think that the facts show that the people of low economic means and minority communities are disproportionately impacted by this. Here's a statistic for you. 22% of tickets fall to people who happen to be African American. Yet 40% of the outstanding debt on collections is in the African American community. So what does that tell you? That people who can least afford to pay are being hit with tickets that they can't even pay on face value, and then they double and triple. And you've got people losing their driver's licenses over this, and which, you know, you lose your driver's license, you lose your job in many respects. Right. So it's really an unfair system that, as we know now, people have taken advantage of for their own personal gain and is at the expense of vulnerable taxpayers. That's got to end.
So I do remember when they put these things up that there's like that fat white line that was my nickname in high school, that you have to stop on or before, right? Like, if you cross that line, and especially in the suburbs, before you turn, if you're going to make this right turn on red,
yep.
and if your wheels are on that line, you're going to get, that camera's going to go off if that's where you stopped before you made the turn. And it seemed like people who were living in those municipalities where that was happening, I don't think that's the same exact case in the city of Chicago, but I know out in the suburbs, that is the case. And people were like, yeah, I know. And they just kind of put up with it. They sort of shrugged their shoulders. This has been going on for a decade now, hasn't it?
Yeah. And then the appeals process is like, forget about it, right? I mean, most people have to go appeal this if they decide to during the middle of the day when most people are working. And it's really just a system that's set up to make a ton of money. And
right. You just want to pay it,
yeah,
as opposed to
I don't believe it's actually making communities safer. And, you know, I would argue that all municipalities right now should be revisiting whether they should be in this business, frankly, and at what cost. You know, they're definitely harming their own community, and is it worth it? I don't believe it is.
And the short yellow lights in downtown Chicago? Shortest yellow light, I believe, in the country. There's been studies done on that.
Yeah.
Why is it so short?
Well, that's a funny thing.
To bring that red light quicker.
Yes.
So you go through a red light.
Yeah.
And which actually causes more accidents.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And then they stopped. They have the countdowns, right, on the walk thing. Mm. That, you know, you always, like, if you're lucky enough to get one of those intersections, you're working
those
it.
Those countdowns are great.
Yeah, actually, you're working yourself to them. Right. I mean, as a driver, you want that. That countdown is very helpful, right? But they stop putting the countdown in because they don't want to tell you, because they do want these. Now, the city is sort of changing its tune on this. Do you think there will be a change? You think that the red light camera, because let's face it, the people who ran the woman who was like the president of one of the red light camera companies went to prison, not just convicted in one state, but two states for malfeasance.
Yeah. Look, Ro, I'd like to believe that we have this unique opportunity right now, in whatever position you're in, elected-wise, to right some wrongs, right? I mean, we just saw the governor pardon a whole bunch of people who were in jail or had convictions for low-level marijuana things, right? That was the right thing to do.
Especially now, right?
Exactly.
People are lined up around a block to pay taxes on their marijuana.
Yeah, but I mean, look, nobody should be in jail for some low-level offense, right? And nobody's life should be ruined because of some low-level offense. And I'm a very much law and order type of person. You know this about me. So, but this red light issue, I mean, you have to look at the facts. And the facts are that as much as we would have liked to believe that this was really all about safety, it's not. It's really a big, huge money grab. And there's significant, what I think, propensity to have a corrupt system in place. And they've frankly had years, like you said, people have gone to jail over this in the past.
Yeah.
They've had years to clean up the system, to make it fully transparent. And when you don't have any transparency in a program, like we have very little to none here, it's only because of these investigative stories by, the Sun-Times and ABC, that frankly we even know a lot of these statistics. When you don't have transparency, there's no accountability. Well, now we have some, thanks to, you know, the media playing their part and our office taking some decisive action. I hope that the municipalities revisit this instead of looking at this as a continued money grab, figure out other ways.
Why would they do that, though? You're the controller of the state of Illinois, Suzanne Mendoza. Why would they listen to you? Why should they listen to you?
Well, because it's the right thing to do. And I'm speaking here because we also, and you may not know this, but our office, because we have a lot of work to do when it comes to collections, we serve as a collection agency, our office gains a $20 administrative fee on each ticket, right, that gets approved.
As part of the collection.
Yeah, and that comes out to about $1 million in revenue for our own office. And I don't want to put a price on doing the right thing. So you don't ever see offices or agencies willingly give up that type of revenue. But I believe that we have to make a position here. We have to stake a position based on a strong moral compass. It's the right thing to do, figure out other ways to cut costs and raise revenues. And I think you can raise revenue by, frankly, cutting a lot of administrative bloat in a lot of these municipalities that have this program. So this is the easy way to go. Don't take the easy route. Do the right thing.
You've been in politics in this town for a while. I won't say how long, but a while. And there's whether, you know, it's in the city government level or the county or at the state level, you know, people are doing the wrong thing. Right. It's like in city council, they all know who the not only who the council members are who are doing the wrong thing, but staff and people like that, that maybe not everybody knows their names. It is amazing to me that as I'm watching the story over the last 30 years, never change in my professional career, still continues not to change. Is there anything that you see that will change any of this?
Yeah, I mean, we just had a big policy change today, right? This is a huge step in the right direction. And while I can't single-handedly wipe out the program, I mean, we're doing what we can, our part, at a cost of $1 million to my budget, to do the right thing and set the example. And we're going to continue to make the case for why municipalities should not be in this business. And hopefully the state will take the lead and, you know, move in the direction that other states, Texas, who I usually hate to compare ourselves with, but they just passed this not too long ago. And there's been about 8 states that have moved in the direction to full out ban red light cameras. It's not working. It's broken and bad policy. And sometimes we just have to, like, draw the line in the sand and say enough. I mean, it's time to say enough.
All right. Susana Mendoza, she is a state comptroller. And I pronounce the M and the P.
You know, it is the season of the epiphany. You know, maybe people will actually have an epiphany and do the right thing.
Oh, I like that. That's very nice. I like how you brought that in. I'm now afraid that there's going to be a lightning strike. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Let's, Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. You too. Let's check in now. Kim Gordon's got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Con Show right here, 720 WGN. Also welcoming Bob Surratt to WGN, started this morning. A ton of fun. You know, it's fun. I mentioned this when Anna and I were talking to each other in between shows on the air, that Anna and I have been trying to have dinner with Bob and Marianne, his wife, for the last 3.5 years since he left WGN. Mm. And we've been, hey, you know, did text each other back and a group text, hey, we're going to do dinner here, we're going to do dinner there, and it never seems to work out. This now gives us an opportunity because now I can't keep going, well, I got that thing. Because
right.
He's right here in the building.
As long as you're okay with it being at like 4 o'clock in the evening.
See, that shit won't work. And that's, I got that thing. All right. Let's do some good here, shall we? Shall we? There's a book out called Life is an Audible. And this is a pretty amazing thing. Jimmy Murray is an amazing story of sports and philanthropy. And he's joining us on the Super Celebrity Hotline right now. Now, Jimmy is the former general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm gonna forgive you that, Jimmy, for just the moment here because of all the other things you've done in your life.
I thank you for that. I thank you for forgiving me. We had a hard day yesterday.
Oh, my God. Did you ever? Did you ever? But we'll get to that in just a second. I want to get to the good stuff here. But you also are one of the people who's been absolutely instrumental in the development of the Ronald McDonald House projects around the country. And Chicago, I think, was it the second Ronald McDonald House, wasn't it?
It was the fact it was God, because it was a great guy, one of my best friends in life now, a guy named Charlie Marino, and his daughter got the terrible disease, and his doc, you know, said there's a place in Philly, because what he saw was families visiting their kids in the hospital. He went home every night because he was local, and he said, well, they had this thing in Philadelphia called the Ronald McDonald House, and that changed all of our lives, because by getting the second house in the world in Chicago, which I call the Vatican, since that's where McDonald's headquarters is,
right,
when people said, hey, what's this thing called the Ronald House? They said, oh, we have one here. And boy, is it special. And the story of it, you can't make up what really happened. It's a great story.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about that, because people, I know people who volunteer there, this is an amazing program, and you know, thanks to McDonald's obviously for, you know, their support. But it's really, it's a fun, they go on, they do private fundraising for these things. There are fundraisers in you know, in Chicago for sure for this. And what it does, it provides a space for families and sometimes patients who are doing outpatient therapy, right, at a children's hospital. And here they've just rebuilt this one downtown, which is gorgeous, next to or close to the Lurie Children's Hospital. Back, you know, in the day, it was up in Lincoln Park where Children's Memorial Hospital was. And it gives an opportunity for people, for families to stay, so they can be close to their kids, or for the kids to stay so they can be close to their family. And now the new facility here has sort of an outpatient, inpatient care system as well. So if the kid has to, you know, go in for an infusion or whatever it happens to be, they don't have to go to the hospital. They can do it right there. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing program.
Well, and the Lurie Hospital is like Children's Hospital here. And, you know, you can't put limits on prayer, because I couldn't even pass biology at Villanova. But it all starts with a little child. And we had a player, Fred Hill, and his daughter, Kim, had leukemia. And then one of his buddies, Stan Lane, started a charity called Eagles Fly for Leukemia. Well, Leonard Toews, our owner, the first big event, he said, Jimmy, check this out. It's got our name on it. Well, I was totally panicked. As I said, I wasn't that good at biology or anything else in Villanova. So I said, little Hail Mary. And I went to St. Christopher's Hospital where she was being treated. And like most things in life, it depends on everybody. So I went there, said a little prayer. They had a chapel called the Quiet Room, where my wife was, I lived. So I went there to see a doctor named Lurie Naaman. And who was he? He was the head of oncology at St. Chris's. So I go in, do my little Jimmy Murray, doc, what do you need? And he takes me on a tour of the hospital. When we're done, he said something very profound. I said, well, what do you need? What can the Eagles do for you? And he said, well, Jimmy, you saw this place. We need everything. Then he stopped, and I think this was the McMiracle start. He says, we need everything, but there's a lady down in Children's Hospital named Dr. Audrey Evans, and I think you should go see her. Well, they never forgave him at St. Chris, and we do have a house there now. So I go down to see this lady doctor. Now, remember, I haven't passed biology, and she could have been a sister of no mercy. Hey, Dr. Evans, Jim Murray, Philadelphia Eagles, what are they? What?
Oh, boy.
You don't know what the Eagles are?
See what you're trying to do.
I said, we're on TV every week. I don't have a television. Strike two. Then I said, we have cash. Sit down. Okay. So Leonard Toews was a guy who was so generous. I introduced him to Dr. Evans. What do you need, Doc? She said, well, we have a room we need for kids to be in solitary because they're getting ready. No. How much? And she said, $50,000. Well, Leonard was a guy who took a hit with AT, and he said, no. How much for the whole floor? And she said, $1 million. And he said, well, the Eagles will pledge $1 million, and Jimmy will go get it. Well, my gosh, I am really panicked. So the book is about, not just as it light as an audible.org, it's about the power of sport. And I love your city. One of the first guy I ever went to was Bill Veeck, who had a pretty good time at bat.
Yes, he did.
In Chicago. And of course, the Bears, you know, Mr. Hallis. When we opened that first house in Chicago, which was, I say, the Vatican, because here's McDonald's headquarters. What's the Ronald House? Well, we have it there. So the story's too long for this interview, but it's in the book because Chicago was the pivotal. God put that right in the right place, because with Charlie Marino's help and Dr. Baum, his oncologist, we literally traveled all over the world. And as I'm on this phone call today, there's almost 400 houses, 385 in 50 countries. And that's all because of Philly to Chicago and the power of sport for good.
Jimmy Murray, Life is an Audible is the book. The Jimmy Murray story, you can find it where all fine books are sold on the internet. It is, it's a very inspirational story. There's a lot of Chicago stuff in it. And thank you for everything you've done for kids and their families who are, you know, dealing with the incredible difficulties that, whether it's pediatric cancers or any of the other diseases, cause in the Ronald McDonald Organization, Ronald McDonald House. house. And so thank you so much for everything you've done. And I will never, ever say these words again, but I did feel sorry for the Eagles yesterday because they lost their quarterback. I did not feel sorry a year ago on the Double Drunk, and I don't want to talk about that. That's it. That's the end of this interview. That's it. But still.
I don't want it to end. I want to tell your buddies, when I come to Chicago next time, I'm rounding you guys up, and I'm going to take you out to dinner so we can really talk about the Bears and the Eagles and the power of sport for good.
Yes.
And all these great people in Chicago. There's six houses in Illinois now that have taken care of kids from all over the world. So
and the
sports
two,
and people who want to help. Life's a team sport.
And the two best
just
fan bases.
I part of your team tonight. And I hope you have a good time with your buddies there.
Thank
and
you,
I'm sticking to that. I'm going to take you out to dinner when I come there next time.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate it. Jimmy Murray, the book is Life is an Audible. Let's check in with Lauren Lapkin now and find out what's happening on the roads and the skies. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Justin coming up after the show? You know, it's so funny. I see Justin's producer. I never see Justin. Justin is in makeup for like 3 hours before he does his show.
I
don't know what that's all about.
They're preparing to extend on the extension situation.
They're on the extension 720?
Yes.
They're going to...
They're preparing. Them preparing.
They're going to lay out a whole 3 hours here?
Correct.
All right. I feel for those guys. They work very, very hard. God bless them. I was wondering if either he or his producer were going to be at work today because of the legal weed situation. So, you know, and I'm surprised to see them, and I'm very pleased,
and not surprised at all to hear there's already a shortage of the marijuana. Classic Illinois not preparing.
Well, okay.
Everyone kind of saw this coming.
Okay. I think it's important to point out that there is a legitimate excuse for this.
Okay,
that. Once it got passed by the legislature in the summer, you have to start. It's a plant; it has to grow, right? And it's a weed, I know, but it still has to grow, and it has to be grown if you want to buy the Mary Jane in Illinois legally.
It's got to be grown here
at the Mary Jane store. It's got to be grown here. Mm-hmm. It's not some ditch weed from Indiana like we used to smoke when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Or from Mexico or from Maui, which was, you know, that was the best stuff.
The Wowie Maui?
Yep, the Sensimilia from Maui. All that sort of stuff. It's not like that. It has to be within the borders. It can't even be near the borders. These grow facilities, they are Illinois only. And so everything, and that accounts for everything. The edibles, the oils, all the, you know, the cartridges that have the THC and CBD and all that stuff in them. As long as it has THC in it, it has to be grown here. So
yes, with new technology, they can grow them faster than ever.
But only so many people have been approved to grow.
Right, exactly.
And so,
yes. We'll approve more.
Well, because that's
they're working on.
I'm just thinking that there has got to be some stoner bros that live in a house together, right? That have built the most perfect weed flower in the history of weed somewhere. I'm going to guess Logan Square because that was the first place to run out of dope. I think that's going to be what it is. And that they're working in their apartment, in their walk-up apartment, in their three flat, and they're using they take a bath in the sink because they can't actually use the shower because the shower is just nothing but weed plants.
There's plants all over the place.
Right. Grow lights. The whole thing's going. I can just kind of imagine that those are the kinds of guys. Those are sort of like the vintners that came over from the old world, who came to America, went to California and built Napa, right? You always hear that story. You know, a guy from Croatia who just, you know, his great-great-grandfather had a grape, and he brought one grape over from Croatia, kept it in his pocket until he could plant it in the ground and then start to build these vines from the old world. There's got to be a story like that for Bud.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, I know so many people who moved out to Denver or California and got... I shouldn't say so many people. It sounds like, but I have friends who have invested their time into the marijuana growing industry, and I have friends this was probably 10 years ago. A buddy who's was like pitching people on it, and we're like, oh my god, he's moving to California. What an idiot! He's starting the whole thing, and this was like 10 years ago. And now he's like, look who's laughing now, everybody.
Yeah.
Because he's got everything. He's got a whole thing going over there.
Yeah.
He's way ahead of everybody on it. Not everybody, but at least in, like, our inner circle. People are like, can you believe so-and-so's going to there to do that? And everyone's kind of like talking on the side of their mouth. And now you're like, genius.
Well, except for I wonder if what happened to places like Oregon will happen here. Because right now, everyone's, we need more, we need more, we need more places. But Oregon has such an influx that they can give everyone that lives in the state a joint for a whole year. It's insane. But again, why we got to look at the federal matters? Because if we're limited right now in supply and places like Oregon have too much, why can't we just get it from them?
Classic feds.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Well, and there was talk that the president was going to sign something here in last June that was going to federalize this, or at least decriminalize federally, not necessarily add to an enforcement piece, but take the enforcement piece out,
mm-hmm.
right? And that didn't happen. And I think I understand why it didn't happen. I think it didn't happen, and it's not necessarily political. I know everything in Washington is political, especially now everything is political. But this had more to do with protecting the investors in these systems right now as they are. Because if you had all these people, like, I'm just going to use Illinois as an example. In order to get a license, whether it was a grow license or a license to sell medical marijuana, when they did this 3.5-4 years ago, when they made it legal to do, or three, whatever it was, when they made it legal and they started selling about 3 years ago, When they did that, to get the license for a dispensary or to grow was $250,000 for the application fee, non-refundable. $250,000, $250,000, just to apply for the right to do it. So that, and obviously that barrier cost of, you know, that was created was trying to keep people who, you know, might not be eligible for the license from applying and then having to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also was seen as a way of keeping, you know, only corporate interests involved in this, which is one of the arguments that you hear here. But that's true. So they wanted to keep those people because those are, you know, if you could afford the application fee and potentially lose $250,000, you had to be somebody, and they wanted to keep those. And I think right now they're trying to protect those somebodies. Eventually, that's going to change. Eventually, this is going to become like alcohol was in the 1930s when prohibition ended. There were fairly strict regulations on it. And then, you know, one of the reasons that the beer industry has grown so exponentially, especially here in Chicago, is they changed the rules about how you can market your product if you are building a beer, right? Or a malt beverage or whatever, you know, however they classified that. And so that's why you've had this, you know, that all of these, it's a law change that allowed all these great breweries to just pop up out of nowhere. So I'm just telling you that will eventually happen here too. And I'm looking for Harold and Kumar, whoever they are, who are up on, you know, somewhere in Chicago, who've got the perfect bud, got the perfect flower to, you know, to be able to one day, your time will come. And I'm sure there's some guys who are going to get out of the joint right now who know a little bit about marketing.
Oh, yeah.
I think that those guys should be allowed. You know, the guys that they're letting go now.
I'm just very interested to see how excited these dispensaries can keep the general. Because you got to figure that for the first week or so, it's just people being curious, right? I mean, yeah. I talk to people who engage in recreational marijuana quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
and they're like,
"Do you?"
Yes. And there, you know, I was talking to him about it, and his response, I think, is for a lot of people. He goes, well, I'm definitely going to check it out, but I'm sure as heck not buying it from him.
Yeah, well, that's all. Well, it's like that's a conversation for another time. We run out of time today.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. The taxation thing is it's driving people nuts. So we'll ask Justin where he's getting his skeech from coming up right after we do this. And the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom comes your way in 3 minutes. All right, Justin Kaufman, we were just going to ask you where you buy your marijuana. Would you like to tell us?
Yeah, sure. I won't stay in line.
Who's your dealer?
I have an Uber Eats account. It just brings it to the house. No, we were joking about it on Friday. I think the idea of standing in line for weed is the only time you would stand in line is when you would go to that college dorm and there'd already be people on the couch and you just have to talk to the girlfriend and
or maybe a line outside the dorm room and everybody's acting like they're not in line.
Right.
Right. They're just saying, oh, just leaning.